tax increases. And Democrats say that they're grateful that Republicans have given up a demand for cuts to Social Security, at least for now.
If no deal is reached by midnight, everyone's taxes could go up. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is under observation at a New York hospital. She is being treated for a blood clot. President Obama plans to make gun control a top priority next year following the Newtown, Connecticut elementary school massacre.
That was the worst day of my presidency, and it's not something that I want to see repeated.
This is NBC News Radio. Lawmakers are trying to head off a possible doubling of milk prices in January. Both parties on the House and Senate Agriculture Committees have agreed to a one-year extension of the 2008 Farm Bill. Republican leaders have not decided yet how they will proceed. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez is confronting new complications due to a respiratory infection. This comes nearly 3 weeks after undergoing cancer surgery in Cuba. And a baby on the way for Kim and Kanye.
Kim Kardashian is having a baby. Her boyfriend, rapper Kanye West, announced during a concert on Sunday night in Atlantic City that she was pregnant, and the family was quick to confirm the news. The reality star is reportedly about 12 weeks along, and this will be the first child for the celebrity couple. I'm Seth Goldman, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Asia is preparing to be the first to ring in the new year. In Sydney, people already are camped out. In Hong Kong, the city's biggest fireworks display is about to get underway. Jakarta plans a huge street party. I'm Veronica Dela Cruz, NBC News Radio.
Because Mike switched to Geico and saved hundreds of dollars on car insurance, his money clip wants to shake his hand firmly for a solid 3 seconds. But it can't. Fact is, most money clips don't have hands to shake with. Switch to Geico, and every time you notice the extra cash, you'll know your money clip wants to give you a firm handshake. But remember, it can't. It doesn't have hands. It is, however, happy that you're saving money.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This is a special announcement from Lumber Liquidators.
Every floor in stock is on sale, and it all has to go at our end-of-year clearance. Get unheard-of clearance deals from just 19 cents a square foot, including first-quality laminates for up to 47% less, hardwood up to 48% less, bamboo flooring up to 22% less. Plus, get special extended financing. Do not miss it. Sale ends close of business Monday. Visit LumberLiquidators.com and find your local store today.
2012 will go down as a year for the record books in Hollywood. Los Angeles Times says thanks to superheroes, vampires, and hobbits, the movie business will finish 2012 with $10.8 billion in box office receipts. That would be the most ever. One more crack at it for Wall Street today, and even as we're only about 18 hours from the fiscal cliff deadline with still no deal, stock futures are holding modestly higher, S&P futures up 4%. As some investors place hope at least some of the aggressive spending cuts and tax hikes can be avoided or at least delayed. Failure to strike a deal would cause economic fallout, but even if there is a deal, experts think there still will be significant drag on the economy in 2013 just from the impasse we've already suffered. The chief U.S. economist at IHS Global Insight has cut his forecast from 2% to 1% for economic growth the first quarter 2013, even if there's a deal sometime today. I'm Andrew Rote in the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Did you know that certain gold and silver coins can be added to your retirement accounts? It's a fact. For years, investors have been adding popular coins like the gold and silver American Eagles to their IRAs and old 401ks. More importantly, gold and silver have quadrupled in value within the past 10 years. Major banks and credible analysts around the world are forecasting even more demand for both gold and silver in the coming years. Isn't it about time for you to consider adding gold to your retirement accounts? When it comes to adding physical metals to your retirement accounts, no one makes it easier and faster than American Bullion. Call now for your free gold guide at 800-664-8864. Find out how to add U.S. minted gold and silver coins to your IRA and old 401k. Call the most trusted name in the industry today, American Bullion. 800-664-8864. Call for your free gold guide. 800-664-8864.
Because Mike switched to Geico and saved hundreds of dollars on car insurance, his money clip wants to shake his hand firmly for a solid 3 seconds. But it can't. Fact is, most money clips don't have hands to shake with. Switch to Geico, and every time you notice the extra cash, you'll know your money clip wants to give you a firm handshake. But remember, it can't. It doesn't have hands. It is, however,
happy that you're saving money.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
I want my company's network to be safer and more reliable.
Do you want to deal with multiple vendors?
No.
Are per-user fees and added feature costs okay?
No.
How about solutions that are hard to install and use?
No.
Offshore or automated phone tree support okay?
No.
Then yes, we can help.
Barracuda Networks offers the largest family of powerful, affordable security, networking, and storage solutions designed to protect business users, apps, and data. All from a single source that's easy to do business with. Protect your business. Visit barracuda.com/products to try any...
The comments, ideas, and opinions expressed in the following program are those of the show participants only. Nothing stated in this program reflects the ideas, opinions, or beliefs of this radio station and or Clear Channel Radio.
Was forward, and we have plenty of reason. Let me welcome back a very good friend of this program and of this host. She, of course, is the Michigan State Director for a group I have a great affinity for, that is Working America. And we welcome back to First Shift, Fran Brennan. Fran, what an honor to have you on this morning.
Good morning, Tony, and thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. We always appreciate being able to talk to you and your listeners.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In the almost 20 years I've been doing talk radio, Fran, this is the first time I didn't have a piece of paper in front of me with notes and questions, and I just wanted to talk to you, and I wanted to do it on air because you and I are that good together. We have nothing to hide, and you know, I've got to tell you, without Working America, we would not have accomplished much of what we did in the last election cycle. And for those people that are not aware of the work that Working America does, it is actually quite nonpartisan in so many ways. It really is about social consciousness. It really is about a voice that was not out there. And it really was about reaching into, literally reaching into households that aren't necessarily union, that aren't necessarily blue, and educating them on the issues that are before them. And I think that that is more than worthy of the effort. I think it's important that we continue on that path. I'm assuming you agree.
I do agree, and thank you. Thank you for all the accolades, and yes, you're absolutely right about who we represent. I do want to underscore that we really don't have any union members in our membership. Our goal is to give a voice, and as you know, Tony, to those people who don't feel that they have a voice at the workplace. And so we are representing all the non-union people who need to be heard and often feel that they're not.
Absolutely. In fact, I've had union people say to me, well, they've never knocked on my door, and I tell them on purpose. They've done that on purpose. Fran, certainly we can take a look back, but I have you here to take a look forward. In order for any organization to stay relevant, they obviously have to have a goal moving forward. The election's over. I'm sure the office is a little cleaner than it was a week ago. You know, you've had a little time to take a nap. What does Working America look like moving forward?
You know, it's exciting because I think this election cycle helped crystallize for a lot of people that what really does work are those conversations, those one-on-one discussions with your family members, your friends, and your neighbors. And that's what Working America, the core of our belief, is that we're reaching out to people in the community, giving them the information they're asking for, and then through those conversations, giving them an empowerment so that they feel that they can go and engage their friends and their neighbors. And what we witnessed, Tony, nationally, I think, was that, you know, it evidently doesn't matter how extremely outnumbered we are by dollars, that if we have if we're representing the people and we're having the message that they want, that we can be victorious in our goals. And I think we witnessed that with President Obama being reelected. I know that for our members, the knowledge of having security with their health care, the potential of having better jobs, of having better quality education for their children, all played into President Obama getting reelected. And I think, you know, you and so many people know all the efforts that were made against him, and yet they fail. I mean, in essence, across the country, people recognize that those conversations and the truth bore more important than some of that vitriolic and scary information that was being released throughout the last few months.
No, certainly a story that you could probably tell hundreds, if not thousands, of times of how many doors you knocked on where people just said these simple words, "I had no idea."
Yeah, and you know, one of the interesting things, we have a member who was quoted as, you know, saying, you know, a news person was asking, "What, do you really like this? The person coming to your door and interrupting your evening schedule and talking to you about issues that you're concerned about?" And he responded by saying, "Yes, because I get to ask questions to the person, the Working America person at the door. I don't get to ask questions to the person on the TV." And I think that's really what we're trying to emphasize here, is that we need that engagement. We need that dialogue going back and forth. And then that information being information that is reliable. You know, Tony, Working America prides itself on making sure that whatever we're saying, whatever our issues are, that we are factual, that we can support it with legitimate organizations, and that we're giving our members that information that they can feel confident about, that it's been vetted and that it is, you know, correct. And that kind of reputation, along with the ability of our organizers to be able to have those conversations, really kind of mobilized so many more people this year. We were astounded that nationally, two-thirds of our members voted for President Obama. And what's unique here about that is that, you know, 70% of our members self-identify as moderate or conservative. So we're not talking that this is, you know, slanted toward the Democrats. It's really not. This is simply letting people know that having those conversations and giving people accurate information empowers all of us.
Well, you know, and Fran, Brendan, I think that certainly Working America embodies the reality of what America has becoming. Sharing the statistics you just shared with us, I have been having an ongoing dialogue that is the common thread through the last week, has been this idea that conservative, whatever that means, or Republican, whatever that means, has changed. That people that actually are on the ground, that go to work every day, that struggle, that succeed, let's put some positive on this, that are raising happy, healthy families, even if they identify as being Republican, are socially not as conservative as they once were. You know, we're getting all kinds of data coming out of the election, all those exit polls, all the polls that are done immediately after an election. And what we're finding out is it wasn't that Mitt Romney wasn't palatable to them. It was the Republican brand that they're no longer represented. So, you know, by virtue of what Working America does, which is an education effort, and that's what it is, you don't tell people you have to vote Democrat. You don't tell people you have to be pro this or anti that. You educate people and allow them, and I think in a very respectful way, Fran Brendan, allow them to make their own decisions.
Thank you, and that is what we strive to do, Tony. We try to just give them the information that so often they aren't privy to. You know, I think we've mentioned this before, that, you know, with the reduction of a lot of the newspapers and the news media outlets, and people being so busy in their lives and doing so much on a day-to-day basis, having information that's going on at your state legislative level and even information at the federal level can be so very confusing. And sometimes you just want to disengage and not even participate in watching news, because you just need to have a break. And so our organizers coming to the door and just having that conversation of what your biggest concern is and what we can share with you regarding that seems to really play an important role, and we're really proud to have the opportunity to do that.
Well, and obviously people open the door. People are willing to have that discussion. I happen to know that there are, amongst your members, people that are stunned by how grateful they are that somebody took the time to stop, to listen, to talk, to educate, to have even a debate. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with any or all of that, Fran Brendan. And as we take a look at what we must do moving forward, not stopping, not taking a break, not waiting until this date next year, it's really about continuing to motivate, empower, and educate people going forward.
It is. And in fact, when you I emphasize the nonpartisan part of it. One of our campaigns was a very nonpartisan approach to educate people on actually the ballot and the difference between the partisan section of the ballot and the nonpartisan section of the ballot. And it was a hard conversation. It's very complicated information, and people genuinely appreciated it. We had so many people saying that they didn't know that if they voted maybe straight party ticket that they weren't voting for the nonpartisan section of the ballot. We had people telling us that they hadn't voted before, and now they were looking forward to feeling more confident
Absolutely.
About voting the first time.
And Fran, let me interrupt you. We got to take the break. Stay where you're at. We'll continue our discussion with Fran Brennan from Working America after we do this.
Hi, this is Susan Gimas with MERS News Service, and I just want to wish everybody a happy holidays.
On 1310 WDTW.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Last year, one in five children was sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
Mommy, sing me to sleep.
Sure, sweetie. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. You're a ball of gas that's very far. 32 light years in the sky. 10 parsecs, which is really high. Helium, carbon, and
hydrogen
fuse to make our starry friend. When it enters supernova stage, it explodes with bursts of rays. And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole. And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole.
Thanks, Mom.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, so it's up to parents to help create a brighter future for them. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
I started using drugs when I was 13 years old. I started with pot, like most people probably do, alcohol, cigarettes, and eventually moved up to methamphetamine and went on to cocaine and eventually ended up on heroin.
I did not have a life. I mean, I owned a multi-million-dollar advertising firm and I couldn't function. My husband packed the children and left. I had no idea where they were, but none of that mattered. All that mattered was smoking crack.
My parents, brother, and sisters are just baffled. You know, how can somebody that supposedly has so much be so miserable and keep throwing his life away?
And I remember my mother saying to me one day, "You're going to die if you don't get help." I wanted to have my life back and my family back. And that's when my mother found Narcanon.
If you or someone you love has a drug or alcohol problem, call Narcanon today at 1-800-468-6933 or visit us at www.stopaddiction.com.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
The following letters were written by our troops.
My dear fellow Americans, I truly appreciate your support.
I was starting to wonder if people had forgotten about us over here. But then one of my buddies showed me this website. And now as tears are streaming down my face, I can see for sure that you haven't. Private Emily B., U.S. Army.
It's so heartwarming to see the American people not letting the men and women of the armed forces be forgotten. Your letters make a group of grown men, battle-hardened and gruff, act like a bunch of kids around a Christmas tree. Thanks. Staff Sergeant Matthew H., U.S. Army.
Your support may be the most important thing our troops can carry with them. But don't take our word for it. Take theirs. To show your support, visit americasupportsyou.mil. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Defense and the Ad Council.
He would come home after a hard day and just start in on me, you know, like, hey, how's your day? How was school? What you got going on? I mean, it gave me the chills.
My father would drive me all the way to the mall. He wouldn't stop until we were right in front of my friends. And oh my God, when...
I wanted to go to Europe, and he seriously made me get a job to pay for it. And that one time...
He insisted on taking us to the movies, even though he knew Stephen totally worked there and I was totally in love with him. And
the time I got this wicked, cool scorpion tattoo on my shoulder, not even the whole arm, just the shoulder, and he grounded me for 2 weeks. 2 weeks! And oh yeah.
When I wanted to major in ceramics, because I'm like way good at it, my dad told me I'd have to pay my own tuition. Like, duh. How am I supposed to earn that kind of dough making pottery?
Embarrass them. Horrify them. Freak them out. Don't worry. They'll appreciate it. Eventually. A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council. Have you been a dad today? For more information, visit fatherhood.org.
Now, Fran Brennan, my guest, the Michigan Director of Working America. Find them online at workingamerica.org. We'll get that up on the Facebook page. We're just talking about the function of Working America and looking forward. Fran, I would imagine, as you know, one of the proposals that did not pass on last Tuesday was Proposal 2, which would have enshrined collective bargaining rights into the Constitution. We're already hearing lots of conversation about right to work. Is this a fight that Working America is willing to take on?
What Working America does is really the agenda is driven by our members. But I think if you recall from last year, Tony, actually I think it was the first time I was on your show, was because of our members' concerns specifically around right to work against teachers that was going on earlier in the year, and then designs to try to privatize teaching with K-12 incorporated, and how really mobilized and engaged our members got because they were so disturbed by this. So I think it's something that our members feel is an issue that the best procedure is to focus on getting good quality jobs in the state of Michigan and getting and improving our educational system for all our students and all our children. And typically, I think most people will agree that doing something with regards to right to work isn't about rebuilding Michigan. That would be about politics. And our members have been very clear. They really want our elected officials to be doing the work about rebuilding Michigan and about getting the jobs and the better quality living that we want in our communities. And they want our elected officials to do their jobs. And part of what happened in this last election cycle was that there was some accountability. There was some reckoning of what had, you know, some of the votes that some of our elected officials took that our members didn't feel were in the best interests of the community and of that representative's constituents. And so I think it would be a mistake if legislators right now during this lame duck session don't focus on rebuilding Michigan and instead focus on political gamesmanship that right now our members feel it would be inappropriate and very short-sighted.
You know, the last I knew, and I'm sure the number has grown, you were obviously well over 100,000 members. I was a part of that really amazing celebration that night in Ypsilanti. It was a very special evening, Fran, and I again want to thank you for inviting me to participate in that. And I know your numbers continue to grow, and I know that one of the goals, of course, is to attract more people to what Working America is and does and is about. Ultimately, as we are continuing to have this discussion, you just said something that really piqued my interest. It is the members that decide what you work on. There aren't too many organizations that are inside out like that.
Yeah, you know, I think last year if you had said to someone in Working America, or maybe in 2011, if you had said that we would be working on cyber school legislation, you know, I have to be honest with you, I wouldn't have really known what you were talking about. And because of our members' concerns, it became a real focal point for us. And I think, you know, in a way we all benefit because we have those conversations that we were talking about earlier. It's, and we aren't going to tell people what they're supposed to be doing. We are truly having that dialogue. And when you do that, Tony, as you know, typically both people learn something if you're listening and sharing. So that's kind of what Working America is about, is we really are going to talk to people about what their concerns are and really listening to them. And then from that point, trying to determine ways in conjunction with our members of how to achieve the goals that we, our members want to try to achieve.
Well, you know, again, I'm just, I'm so glad we're having this discussion today, Fran, because it's great to talk about Working America without it, and not that I, of course, mind, you know I don't, and without it being about a particular topic or particular cause or particular fight. Not that we're not going to have those conversations in the future. I may have you on next week for all I know. And happy to do it. I just think it's important for those that are listening to us this morning that want to be engaged in something, that want to belong to something, that want to believe in something, that Working America is an option for them. That's all I'm really trying to accomplish this morning.
You know, and you are such a good friend, and I thank you so much for doing this, because we are out there and we are in everyone's neighborhoods and we're trying to let people know about us. But because of opportunities that you give us and others give us, it gives us a larger voice to give other people that we haven't reached yet information about us. And I think that there's a lot of people, not just in Michigan, this is nationally, but I'm speaking for Michigan right now, who, you know, things are getting a little bit better, but they're still concerned, and they still don't understand a lot of what's going on. And I think, too, a lot of people think that there's a lot of anger. And what we're finding with our organizers is that there's not a lot of anger. Actually, your communities are really full of people with hope that care about each other and that want to work together. And that is something that's really empowering, because it strips away that kind of element of fear and I'm going to just stick with myself in my house and not do anything. But the reality is that there's a lot of people out there and that they care. And we have fun together too. And I think you kind of witnessed that yourself. It's truly a community organization that becomes kind of an extended large family. And I'm really grateful that I have the opportunity to be the state director with so many great members.
Yeah, well, and certainly there are some amazing people, a very diverse group of people with diverse knowledge and skill sets. Certainly I learn from you every time I have you on. You're always wonderful about providing me with information I thought I had and didn't. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why the relationship we have with Working America, and more specifically with you, Fran Brennan, works as well as it does, because ultimately, and you just said it perfectly, ultimately we live in communities and we all want the same things, no matter what side of the political aisle you may fall on. Who doesn't want safer neighborhoods, Fran? Who doesn't want better schools? Who doesn't want accountability? Who doesn't want transparency? Who doesn't want better access to health care? Who doesn't want fairness in the workplace? I mean, who doesn't want those things?
You're so right, and I think what happens often is that people are hearing and reading information that is making it sound like we're all on opposing sides. And when you have that conversation, you do realize that we're not on opposing sides. We actually all want the same things. We might have different ways of seeing how to get to that goal, but those are all discussions that people can have and can have in an amicable way and work toward getting to the goal.
And you've proved that.
But we...
And I'm sorry, Fran, we're out of time, but you've proved that in spades. I know you'll be back. I appreciate you. I appreciate our friendship, and I appreciate Working America. Thanks so much for taking some time with us today.
Thank you.
Fran Brennan, again, the Michigan State Director for Working America.
This is Jessica Tramontana, Communications Director with Progress Michigan, and we wish all of Tony Truppiano's audience a happy holidays.
On 1310 WDTW.
Hi, Tony Truppiano here. One of my pet projects for 2012 is to get those of you who have yet to register to vote to do just that. If you are connected to the internet, I have made it very easy for you to register. Just go to www.thetonyshow.org, that's www.thetonyshow.org, and click on the register to vote button that is prominently displayed on the homepage. Now there are no excuses, and it only takes a few minutes, and it's free as well. So if you have to register to vote, I am not concerned as to why, but I am concerned if you don't do it now. Again, just go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the button that says register to vote right here. We all care about our democracy, but if you are not registered to vote, then no matter how passionate you are, without voting or having the ability to vote, it's honestly just complaining, and we have all had enough of that. Again, go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the register to vote button now and register.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
First Ship with Tony Truppiano.
I believe we can keep the promise of our founding. The idea that if you're willing to work hard, it doesn't matter who you are or where you come from or what you look like or where you love. It doesn't matter whether you're black or white or Hispanic or Asian or Native American or young or old or rich or poor, able, disabled, gay or straight. You can make it here in America if you're willing to try.
On 1310 WDTW.
Let's sing that new song.
My music track, track, track from a modem jack. Jack, Jack plays MP3s, threes, threes that I download fast, fast, fast. I read the bits, bits, bits on the microchip, chip, chip, and I burn, burn, burn all my favorite hits, hits, hits.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in technology, but parents can help keep them updated. Go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
When my family found out I was on drugs, they were devastated.
It was killing them, you know, it was killing them. It
tears your family up more than it does you.
You want to stop, you know, in your heart you need to stop.
My mom was just a nervous wreck. I could just see her. She could see her getting older way too fast.
My oldest brother banned me from the house. You're a drug addict. I don't want you around my kids.
I just couldn't help it. I couldn't get a grip on it. I couldn't even stay clean to get my son back.
It doesn't matter if it's Monday at 10 in the morning or if it's Sunday at 2 in the morning. You got to go get drugs or money, one or the other.
You pray to God, please help me quit this, stop this.
My dad was frantic, and he looked at me and he said, we're not going to gamble with your life.
I wanted to have my family back, and that's when my mother found Narcanon.
If you or someone you love has a drug or alcohol problem, call Narcanon today at 1-800-468-6933 or visit us at www.stopaddiction.com.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Truppiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Marilyn Olson, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Yo, what's up, diggity dog?
Listen to the song of the day.
Great googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contest.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Truppiano on Facebook. And also follow us. at Tony Trippiano on Twitter.
And it is your first shift. Well, we did start last week. I don't know that it's going to be a series, but an occasional look at how music helps move the message. And you know what? Music is a powerful tool that I don't think we use enough of. With that said, let me turn my attention to my next guest. Joining us now is Samuel Bergson. Samuel is the director of marketing at Cause Static Production. He and his colleagues at Cause Static are law-abiding citizens who started this production company to promote music as a tool for peace and social change. They are currently promoting an artist titled Long Day Sin. The group's influences are clearly illustrated in the rendition of the classic song Money, That's What I Want, written in 1959 by Detroit's own Berry Gordy and Janie Bradford. What makes Long Day Sin's version of this song unique is its political conscience delivered through diverse ethnic influences, and we're going to listen to that in just a few minutes. But let me welcome Samuel to First Shift on this Monday morning. Samuel, I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving and happy holidays to you.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you.
I appreciate that. In fact, if I had gone on and continued your bio, when you we're going to talk a little bit about your story, because I think you're kind of the American dream in a lot of ways, Samuel. When you first learned to play the guitar, the first song you learned was Jingle Bells. So
Jingle Bells.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Samuel, a little bit about where you came from and how you ended up where you're at.
Sure. So I grew up in a town in northern Lebanon called Tripoli. And from the first 8 years, it was, as you know, the area is quite unstable. And there was a lot of war. And eventually in 1976, things were so bad that we essentially sold everything we owned. My dad was already working in North America, and we moved to North America with basically nothing but a suitcase full of clothes and no documentation whatsoever to show for it. And when we came to North America, we experienced a completely different way of life than we had been accustomed to before, and we were open to opportunities that we did not have, and music was one of them. I started playing the guitar at 8 years old, and I played Jingle Bells, and I kept playing until my fingers got all blistered and stayed with music ever since in some capacity.
Well, you know, I you had heard me in my introduction talk about the power of music and how it relates to message, Samuel. And I've got to tell you, one of the reasons why your press release picked my interest is I think that it's an underutilized method of communicating. I don't think that the music industry has necessarily done themselves any favors. And you're, of course, you and your partners are trying to do something about that, aren't you?
That's correct. We're interested. So this particular, our whole idea is we like to promote artists who have a social conscience. It's not about, like, pardon the word, sex and being vibrant and trying to sell something that's illusory. We're about being realistic. So we like to choose artists who have that focus in mind. And so Money, That's What I Want is in keeping with the theme of the album that's put out by Long Day Sin, which is to be more aware of what's happening in our society, to be more informed about what's going on in our society so that we can influence and help shape our future.
All right. Guys, if you have that song queued up, would you go ahead and play some of it for us now? this up on Facebook so you can all take a listen to all of it. Samuel, what comes to mind when you hear that?
You know, what's amazing is you have these guys, you know, they're Arabs, Jews, Americans, Christian Americans, that come together and they have a passion for what they want to do. They sit down and they forget about the borders of their countries and the differences that they may have, and they work together to create something unique and interesting. You know, part of the reason why they chose the song was because they felt like they can own it and then reinterpret it and make it contemporary, bring it into our today's context. And the other reason is that they wanted, if Berry Gordy and Jimmy Bradford were to hear it, they wanted them to be proud of the work they had done on it. Another song that was under consideration at the time was The Promised Land by Chuck Berry, which is another great song from that era of the civil rights. But they ended up moving this one because they could get their heads around it a bit more. But that's, you know, these guys are just passionate about what they do, and they want people to feel that passion and be passionate about what they do in their own lives.
My guest again is Sam Bergson. He is the director of marketing at Cause Static Productions. And, you know, Samuel, when we listen to that song, or we think about what it may represent to us personally or individually, you know, last week we did a segment. This is something that I think will resonate with you in a big way. On the income disparity in this country, where we've all heard it's become cliched, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, but we now have data that backs that up as fact. And, well, you know what? Maybe money doesn't always get us what we want, does it?
No, it does not. Money is just a tool to get things done. And I think what the band wanted to focus on was more the social context of money, being aware of the fact that it's irony at its best. And musically, that irony comes across. When you listen to the song, you don't realize at the beginning the tempo is 7 beats per bar to 8 beats per bar to resolve into the common 4-4 time that we work in. The solo during at the end of the song is antagonistic. It's F sharp major playing against E sharp major, just to show that we need money to live and to pay for bills and have some happiness, but it's not the only thing. There are other ways of achieving that. So there's that sort of antagonistic, agonistic feeling and musically trying to be conveyed through the message of the song.
Tell us why Long Day Sin, or how they came into the Cause Static Productions family.
Well, we go out looking for artists who have a message that's meaningful, that have something to say. Like I said before, we're not interested in this, you know, everything's pretty and beautiful. We're more interested in realism. We want groups that do that. And one of the singers from Berkeley here in Cambridge, and we were watching some of his own band, and we decided we'd pull different musicians from different bands and have them work together to create this particular project, because they all had the same philosophical belief, and we felt that if we brought them together, that would translate into the music that they created.
It's special stuff, and this is something that I'm pretty keen on right now. Samuel, stay with us. We need to take a quick break. I'd like to chat with you just a bit longer, and
sure.
We'll do that after the break. Samuel Bergson, again, my guest. He's the director of marketing at Cause Static Productions. We're going to get all of the relevant information up on the Facebook page, if it isn't already there. In the meantime, let's take a quick break.
Hello, it's Lori Lamarin from Planned Parenthood, wishing all of the listeners a wonderful and blessed holiday season.
On 1310 WDTW.
Don't stop. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Whatever happened to good old-fashioned play? As we grow up, being physically active often changes somehow from playing to exercising. Play is fun. Exercise, well, for many of us, that's not fun. And without play, we quit being active, so we get out of shape and start gaining weight. But new reports call on us to be physically active for the sake of our health, so what can we do? At the President's Council on Physical Fitness and Sports, Executive Director Melissa Johnson says it's simple. Get on your walking shoes and go for a walk, or do something else you enjoy.
A lot of sedentary or deconditioned people haven't yet experienced the good feeling of just movement. And once that becomes familiar to them, they don't want to stop.
Federal officials recommend 30 minutes of moderate activity on most, if not all, days of the week as a minimum for good health. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Sergeant Matthew Kyle was on his second tour in Iraq when injured.
I was shot in the neck by an Iraqi sniper on combat patrols.
As a quadriplegic, Sergeant Kyle will require specialized medical care and benefits for the rest of his life. That's where Paralyzed Veterans of America can help. National Service Officer Bobby Hager explains.
A National Service Officer exists solely to help veterans get their benefits. We're able to fill out all of the forms and applications and ask for all of the benefits that that veteran's entitled to.
Matthew's wife, Tracy Kyle.
We don't have the knowledge to go through this by ourselves. And these benefits are going to take you through the rest of your life.
If you don't ask for a benefit, the VA can't give it to you. The veteran doesn't know what to ask for.
We could not have done this journey without the Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Paralyzed Veterans is an independent, not-for-profit organization founded by vets for vets.
To help, visit pva.org.
I started using drugs and alcohol when I was about 12 years old. I was bored and I thought drugs would be exciting.
I started doing drugs because I was shy. I wanted to fit in.
I thought using drugs was a good way of dealing with stress.
My parents must have told me a million times,
don't do drugs, you know, they'll ruin your life. Now I know what they all meant.
People often begin using drugs as a solution to a problem. Eventually, the drug use itself becomes a much greater problem. Call Narcanon Arrowhead today at 1-800-468-6933.
I'm in the car next to you on the highway. I sit in front of you on the bus. I'm one out of every six Americans, and I'm struggling with hunger. This isn't an uncontrollable epidemic. There's enough food in this country to feed every hungry person. Please, visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for those around you, quietly struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The odds of this Alaskan-born pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy and you feel fine. But that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Doesn't always cause symptoms, but it can be prevented. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Recently on First Shift.
Let's welcome Will in Milford to the show. Will, thanks for punching in this morning. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tony, how you doing, man? I just wanted to let everybody know about your Facebook page and how great it is. I mean, you keep me abreast on stuff on the weekends and everything, and it's just a valuable page. If people haven't put a like on it yet, they need to, because there's a lot of good information. Keep everybody abreast.
First Shift with Tony Trivia
on 1310 WDTW.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
speed pouring,
drink recipes,
customer service skills the industry is looking for,
and much more.
All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan.
Please call 313-962-5020.
Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan. Your future is waiting for you now.
Samuel Bergson is my guest. He's the director of marketing at Cause Static Productions. We do have up on the Facebook page as we speak the rendition of Money, That's What I Want by Long Day Sin. I want to recommend that you go listen and share it with those in your circle of influence. As I said last week, said again this morning, I do believe that we are underutilizing a tool that is critical, and that is music. What are the long-range plans, Samuel, of Cost Added Productions? How involved in socially conscious messaging through music do you plan on getting?
More so, just to give you an idea of how how we work with artists and choosing songs, a lot of research goes into picking a song and writing the lyrics. So for this particular case, what turned us on to looking at economic disparity among African Americans was a work done during the Second World War that's titled American Dilemma. They had the social scientist who did it was Gunnar Myrdal. And his work largely provided evidence for a lot of civil rights movement changes that Martin Luther King fought for, including eliminating segregation in schools and what have you. So we like to work with artists who are thinking that way and who focus on these types of social aspects. The opposite of Long Day Sin is that we're working with a saxophonist who's playing songs that brought about happiness. And what's kind of sparked this interest of us is we came across an article that was exact measuring happiness between different ethnicities in the United States. And what was sobering was that we're all equally miserable or we're all equally happy. And so we decided to focus on the happy side of this. And what I mean by that equally is that the study found no statistical significance between level of happiness between African Americans and whites. So whether you're affluent or not affluent, Black, white, Chinese, you equal degrees of emotional well-being was observed, which is an interesting thing. So we're working with that. We're working with an opera singer who's also like-minded that way. So we just look more at the person and what they believe as opposed to what kind of marketing machine can be created through the artist.
Well,
and
Well, that's all right, Sam. Well, let me suggest that by doing that, by using lots of different genres, you're not leaving any constituency behind.
Well, that is true. But like I said, it's more important who the person is and what they believe and what they want to take to the people. Like, what is their message? What are they trying to communicate? That's very important to us.
No, it obviously is. So where do you folks go from here? I mean, are you raising money through this? And is the goal to raise money to raise awareness on issues?
That is correct. I think the ultimate goal is to start thinking of terms of we. Unfortunately, from a marketing and promoting of the music perspective, we don't have the deep pockets that big label have. So as a result, we're a little more creative about how we promote. We are thinking of doing a Kickstarter project to help pay for some of the print campaign, because it's very expensive to use that as a media to communicate new artists. We're also going to continue being, like I said, using PR releases as creative and as insightful and as thoughtful as we could possibly be.
Now, I think this is just a very clever and creative way to do something that I believe in. And, you know, Samuel, for those that, and I don't know that anybody doesn't like some kind of music. I've never heard anybody say, "Ah, pshaw, not music." And it really does present, again, an underutilized opportunity. You get the right artist with the right song, with the right message, as we know. You get magic. And, you know, you are actually, you know, just trying to, and I don't mean this in a negative way, force a little magic.
Well, we're doing the best that we can.
No, you certainly are. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning. If people want more information, where can they find you on the web?
You can either Google us under the band name, Long Day Sin, or go to our website, which is L as in long, D as in day, sin, SIN.com. And there's contact information. They can hear other music we have and learn how to play some of the songs on the guitar tabs available, etc.
All right. Well, I know that I'm on your mailing list, so I'll look forward to following you folks. And if there's anything we can do to help you promote this worthwhile effort, let us know, Samuel.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on the show.
Appreciate it. Samuel Bergson again with Cause Static Productions. Just, you know, again, a little, and I, you know, from time to time we're going to visit the socially conscious music. This is twice now we've done it. You know, there's something to be said, truly to be said, about messaging. Many of us connect to music. Certainly, you know, let's use this season as an example. Why do you think you hear Christmas music right after, or right before, if you will, Thanksgiving? It evokes emotion, and that's what good music does. I guess bad music evokes emotion, too, just a different kind of way. You know, when we've had social causes or, national or worldwide disasters, We Are the World comes to mind, where that raises money, you know, for relief efforts. It doesn't surprise me. And actually, what does surprise me is that, you know, music isn't used in a bigger way to sell a message or to win over constituencies. He mentions, you know, an opera singer. Who would have thunk, right? Certainly rap has been socially conscious since its beginning. I think the, you know, and if I'm wrong, somebody will correct me, but I think the whole tenet of rap music is about being socially conscious, not necessarily responsible, but socially conscious, and that's not a bad thing. And so as we try to move people in different ways, maybe it's just words, sometimes it's just music, sometimes it's both. You know, a good instrumental song can wreak the kind of emotion that you want out of somebody as much as a strong lyric can. There's no question that's true, and it's a powerful way to move people. It's good to see that there are people out there that are dedicating serious time and effort and energy to this particular cause, because I think it's an important thing. And so glad that we had Samuel on today. And you can go to the Facebook page where we've already got the stuff posted. And again, I ask you to share that with those in your circle of influence. So thank you again, Samuel, for being with us this morning. Okay, to just kind of tease you a little bit about the next segment, we're going to be setting up with Jonathan Fleece, who is the co-author of a book, The New Health Age. In just a minute, we actually had him on months ago, and had threatened to do this, but with the election on top of us, it got just this side of impossible to include it in all the candidates and issues that we were covering. Now that we have the election behind us and we're moving on, we thought it might be a good time to do a series. So we're going to start today with an overview, and then over the next 3 weeks, we are going to continue the series with Jonathan Fleece, just walking us through some of the health issues that we deal with, how to proactively deal with them, and what your personal responsibility is. We're also going to be focusing a great deal on the Affordable Care Act moving forward, because it is going to become a much more significant part of your life, whether you like it or not. By the year 2014, when it is almost completely 100% in effect, and I told you this before and I'll tell you this again, you will learn to love Obamacare. Why? Because it's going to make your life a whole lot better and healthier. Quick break here. Co-author of the book, The New Health Age, Jonathan Fleece, when First Shift continues. Stay with us.
This is Anthony from First Shift, wishing our audience a happy and safe holiday.
On 1310 WDTW.
Unions work. Did you know that workers covered by a union contract earn more money each year than non-union workers? And that a contract can put more dollars in your pocket each and every week? A union contract protects your wages, giving your family financial security. Does more money in your pocket sound good? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Meeting teen girls online is easy. All you really have to do is go into a chat room and start talking. Once we start chatting, I act as cool as possible. The more we chat, the more they trust me. When they send their picture, I tell them how hot they are. After I convince them we're soulmates, I ask to meet in person. Once that happens, well, that's when things get really interesting.
Online predators know what they're doing. Do you?
1 in 5 kids online is sexually solicited. Visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
2 out, last of the ninth, bases loaded. Here's Santos. He's 0-4 today. 269 hitter for the year.
We could be going into extra innings here.
I agree. Here's the pitch to Santos. Fastball hit in the air, deep down the left field line. It's headed toward the pole. That ball is...
Please deposit 25 cents for the next 3 minutes.
Radio. You shouldn't have to pay for it. This message brought to you by America's 13,000 local radio stations who believe some things were just meant to be free.
This is Detroit's Progressive Talk, 1310 WDTW, Dearborn, Detroit. Listen on iHeartRadio. NBC News is next.
NBC News Radio, I'm Chris Jansing. Congress plans to reconvene later this morning in an 11th-hour effort to avoid the fiscal cliff. Ahead of a midnight deadline, NBC's Danielle Lee on the last-ditch wrangling.
Where are they divided? Aides say they're specifically still divided on at what salary taxes should increase. But they say there was progress in terms of tax increases for the wealthiest of Americans, also avoiding the inheritance tax increases. And Democrats say that they're grateful that Republicans have given up a demand for cuts to Social Security.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is being treated for a blood clot in a New York hospital. She suffered a concussion when she fell at home earlier this month. A judge has ordered a psychiatric exam for the woman accused of pushing a man to his death in front of a New York City subway train. Prosecutors claim she thought it would be cool and also blamed Muslims for the September 11th terror attacks. The Al-Qaeda branch based in Yemen is offering a bounty for anyone who kills the U.S. ambassador to Yemen. This is NBC News Radio. At least nine people are dead after a bus crash on I-84 in eastern Oregon. Police reports say the bus slid through a guardrail and down an embankment when the driver lost control. It's party time in New York's Times Square as they get ready to watch the drop of a Waterford crystal-studded ball welcoming in 2013. NBC's Wendy Gillette is already there.
Hundreds of thousands will usher in the new year here from all over the world.
Australia.
Canada.
Because Mike switched to Geico and saved hundreds of dollars on car insurance, his money clip wants to shake his hand. Firmly. For a solid 3 seconds. But it can't. Fact is, most money clips don't have hands to shake with. Switch to Geico, and every time you notice the extra cash, you'll know your money clip wants to give you a firm handshake. But remember, it can't. It doesn't have hands. It is, however, happy that you're saving money.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
We thought a charging rhino would be the perfect way to show the big deals at Office Max. But they sent us a rhino the size of a chipmunk. He's a metaphor for the tiny, tiny prices you'll pay after our big 20% discount on everything you can fit in an Office Max shopping bag. Whoa, the tiny rhino is charging the bag! And he's out cold. Find our bag in your Sunday, December 30th newspaper or download the coupon at OfficeMax.com. Offer ends January 5th. Restrictions apply. See our bag, website, or store for details.
Higher ticket prices, better films, and a sort of recovering economy all have combined to make 2012 the best year ever for Hollywood. Los Angeles Times reports the business is finishing the year with about $10.8 billion made, thanks to blockbusters about vampires, superheroes, and one about a hobbit, as well as Oscar buzz-inducing fare, such as Lincoln. One step closer to merger, perhaps. The Board of American Airlines Pilots Union has approved a labor framework that would work if the bankrupt carrier is bought out by U.S. Airways, as has been one of the plans floated. Turns out people who work for American Airlines have developed a rep, and not a very good one. The website airfarewatchdog.com has conducted a survey and has found that American Airlines employees are the rudest in the industry, according to customers. Stock futures up ahead of the final trading day of the year. S&P futures gaining 6, NASDAQ futures up 2. I'm Andrew O'Day in the newsroom at marketwatch.com.
Did you know that certain gold and silver coins can be added to your retirement accounts? It's a fact. For years, investors have been adding popular coins like the gold and silver American Eagles to their IRAs and old 401ks. More importantly, gold and silver have quadrupled in value within the past 10 years. Major banks and credible analysts around the world are forecasting even more demand for both gold and silver in the coming years. Isn't it about time for you to consider adding gold to your retirement accounts? When it comes to adding physical metals to your retirement accounts, no one makes it easier and faster than American Bullion. Call now for your free gold guide at 800-664-8864. Find out how to add U.S. minted gold and silver coins to your IRA and old 401k. Call the most trusted name in the industry today, American Bullion. 800-664-8864. Call for your free gold guide. 800-664-8864.
Because Mike switched to Geico and saved hundreds of dollars on car insurance, his money clip wants to shake his hand. Firmly. For a solid 3 seconds. But it can't. Fact is, most money clips don't have hands to shake with. Switch to Geico, and every time you notice the extra cash, you'll know your money clip wants to give you a firm handshake. But remember, it can't. It doesn't have hands. It is, however, happy that you're saving money.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This is a special announcement from Lumber Liquidators.
Every floor in stock is on sale, and it all has to go at our end-of-year clearance. Get unheard-of clearance deals from just 19 cents a square foot, including first-quality laminates for up to 47% less, hardwood up to 48% less, bamboo flooring up to 22% less. Plus, get special extended financing. Do not miss it. Sale ends close of business Monday. Visit LumberLiquidators.com and find your...
The comments, ideas, and opinions expressed in the following program are those of the show participants only. Nothing stated in this program reflects the ideas, opinions, or beliefs of this radio station and or Clear Channel Radio.
I turn my attention now to an op-ed that was in this weekend's Detroit Free Press. The guest commentary is titled, Why Can't Republicans Figure Out How to Win the White House? And joining us now is Ryan Fishman. Ryan's in Birmingham. He describes himself as a lifelong Republican who grew up in a family of Democrats, the poor guy. He is the vice president of strategic consultation at Steward Media. And, Ryan, I want to welcome you to First Shift this morning, and thanks for spending some time with us.
Tony, don't you want to know what they did wrong?
Oh, I think we can probably have that discussion. I think we know what they did wrong. I got to tell you, of course, you know I'm very liberal. I know you're very conservative. But you and I are going to agree on a lot of stuff this morning. And I want to start with this, Ryan. I was talking about this in the last hour. In order to have, I think, real hearty debate, in order to find true compromise, in order to plug a lot of holes that we have in our economic system, in our social system, and so on and so forth, we need two vibrant and relevant parties. And I don't think we have two vibrant, relevant parties right now. Your thoughts on that?
I think the problem with the modern Republican Party and the modern Democratic Party, too, because both parties are sort of doing the exact same thing, is they're shifting to the ends of the spectrum. They don't see that they're going to win in their primaries if they're trying to come to the middle. And so what you wind up with is a lot of candidates on the left and the right who have made erratic promises to people that, frankly, they can't keep for the sake of our stability, for the sake of bipartisanship, for the sake of moving forward. And the debate has become very odd, and it's not about the issues, and it's not about how we fix our problems. It's all about catering to fringe players, and I think if we can fix that in both parties, or at least try to move both parties forward to the middle, we can start to solve the problems that we have. And then after that, maybe we can go back and have some of these ancillary discussions.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about your party. And actually, you say, and this was a really well-written piece, Ryan. I really enjoyed your analysis. And you say that you actually maybe consider yourself more a conservative than a Republican. How hard was that to write?
You know, it wasn't that difficult because this is something that's gone on in my head for a few years. You know, first, I'll say this, I go back to, yes, being a lifelong Republican in the House of Democrats, my mom, an MEA teacher for 40 years, so that's why I write so well. I have to credit the Democrats for that. But ultimately, and I worked on George Bush's campaign in 2004, I was there through 2008, and then there was a lot of this sort of religious right sort of bubbling up and coming through in it. And it came up really 2006, those midterm elections, and I had questions about my faith in the Republican Party. And then after 2008, when the Tea Party resurfaced, a lot of people will disagree with me on this point, maybe not Democrats, but the Tea Party, I don't think, was any re-embodiment of great economic principles. It was another way for the religious right to repackage itself and say the exact same things, but with a new brand and a new identity. It worked. It was hot. It was fresh. It brought people into the fold. But now we have this ongoing battle to keep pushing our party farther and farther out to the religious spectrum. So it's not so difficult for me to say. I've really come to terms with this over the last 5, 6, 7 years, the fact that the Republican Party is moving in a direction that I'm not particularly fond of. But having said that, I'm still, in my mind, closer to a Republican the way, let's say, Ronald Reagan might have called himself a Republican, or the way Abraham Lincoln might have called himself a Republican. Small government and solving the problems in our country through small government, less intrusion into the fiscal system. And frankly, as I wrote in the column, big government doesn't need to come up because our church disagrees with the way people's social morality and values are going. We don't have to grow the size of government because we don't like what somebody else does in our own home. We just have to preach at home what we want our family to be, and that's how you preserve that part of the party's values.
Wow. The Republican Party needs to hire you as their chief strategist because everything you've just said made way too much sense, Ryan. I think that's, and again, that's as true on the Democratic side. I think one of the things that Democrats have perhaps figured out better than Republicans is we don't necessarily feel like we've got to agree on everything, and we don't. Republicans, especially whatever we want to call the current day Republican Party, and I really noticed this the last 8 or 10 weeks of the campaign, if you don't agree with everything that's being said on the Republican side, then you're just not a Republican. And I think ultimately that hurt the brand in a pretty fantastic way. Listen, whether we can argue whether or not the president received a mandate on Election Day, whether that's true or not, but one thing we cannot debate is that the Republicans lost the White House on Election Day.
I think fundamentally, you make a very valid point. And as a matter of fact, when I was still in your business a few years ago after the 2008 election, I had a conversation with James Carville, who, you know, love him or hate him, Republicans, a lot of them don't like him. He made a very, very valid point along those lines, and his was, after a presidential election or any major election season loss, the Democrats sort of do this thing where they go out in a field somewhere and they sing Kumbaya and they figure out how they're going to work together for the next 4 years. And the Republicans start cutting heads off, and everybody wants to fight, and everybody wants to blame each other, and nobody can sort of work together. And having had some campaigns in this election cycle that I worked on and then we lost, one of the things that we found it most important to do afterwards was sit down and figure out what did we do wrong and what did we do right the next time. And that, I think, is the fundamental thing Republicans failed to do. And it's unfortunate because if we did sit down and analyze why we weren't successful and how we move forward together and in a positive way, we might be turning one election cycle loss into three election cycle wins. But we seem to struggle with that. And ultimately, the worst thing that we could continue to do now is splinter and move right. If the Republicans don't move center now and work with Democrats and work with the president and solve the problems we have, there's no chance of success in 4 more years because nobody will trust them.
Wow. Well, no, there's a statement. Kind of made me a little speechless there, Ryan Frischman. All right. So here's the question. Do you envision that the John Boehner led House and the Mitch McConnell led Senate will do exactly what you just said? Will they work with their colleagues? Will they work with the president? Do they understand the reason they did not win is because America doesn't see them as being willing to compromise?
I hope so. I can't promise anything, but I certainly hope so. And I think the place to start, frankly, is, and I know this is sort of a tough matzo ball for people to swallow, but I think the place to start is having Democrats who are centrists, guys like Gary Peters, who I personally vote for and support. I actually can't anymore because I was gerrymandered out of his district. But there are a lot of great moderate Democrats in the House and in the Senate, the former statesmen, if you will, that I don't want to say Ted Kennedy necessarily, but, you know, these iconic sort of members of the House and Senate leaders were moderate people who knew how to build relationships across the aisle. What we need to do is have guys like Gary Peters try and reach their hand out and find partners in the Republican Party, because they're so good at doing that, and convince those guys that we have to work together. And then I think there is a job to be done at the top, and I think I've heard John Boehner and Mitch McConnell say this in the last few days. It's time for us to figure out how we're going to sit at the table and what we're going to do. If we don't do that, that's the end of the modern era of leadership. And I think it's a question of job security. If I was a Republican in the House or Senate right now and worried about reelection in another 2 years or 4 years, I'd be thinking about how I'm going to get reelected, because as a political strategist, I always think about how people get reelected. And my thought, my point to anybody would be, you've got to make yourself look like somebody who's willing to go to Washington and work, because the approval ratings are at an all-time low. And the reason is people think that people in politics don't want to work on anything.
Now, unfortunately, Ryan Fishman, there's a great deal of truth to what you've just said. I don't imagine, as liberal as I am, I also understand the reality of our economy. I also understand the reality of policy. I also understand the fiscal the cliff that we truly are on. This is not a made-up subject matter. We have trillions of dollars of debt. It's not going to get better. We do have to look at creative ways to solve problems, but we also need to be able to have a discussion about it without the fringes on either side trying to co-opt the message and make it sound like if we don't do it their way, then we have committed some kind of serial murder. Because that doesn't promote any idea that matters. Ryan, stay with us. We've got to take a quick break here. Much more to get to after we take the break. I want you to notice we have not once had this question. Was this Mitt Romney's fault? I'm not sure it was. 888-552-3595 if you want to join us. Ryan Fishman, my guest. I'm Tony Trupiano. We'll be back.
This is Chris Mihalakis, president of the Metro Detroit AFL-CIO, wishing all of the listeners of First Shift with Tony Trupiano a happy holidays and a Merry Christmas.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
feed pouring, drink recipes,
customer service skills the industry is looking for,
and much more.
All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan. Please call 313-962-5020. Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan. Your future is waiting for you now.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is the increased likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have the peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
The following letter was written by Technical Sergeant Jerry G., U.S. Air Force.
I've just finished reading over some of the correspondence you've sent us over here. And for an old dog like me, I was choked up. Thanks to each and every one of you. You're the reason why I have proudly put on the uniform of the American forces, to serve folks like you, those we all love and honor, and those who do not have what we have, but who are willing to stand next to us and fight for their own freedom as well. So the next time you see one of my brothers or sisters in arms, shake their hands or pat them on the back. Tell them you support them. This is what we cherish more than anything.
Your support may be the most important thing our troops can carry with them. But don't take our word for it. Take theirs. To show your support, visit americasupportsyou.mil. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Defense and the Ad Council. The following letters were written by our troops.
My dear fellow Americans, I truly appreciate your support. I was starting to wonder if people had forgotten about us over here, but then one of my buddies showed me this website, and now his tears are streaming down my face. I can see for sure that you haven't. Private Emily B., U.S. Army.
It's so heartwarming to see the American people not letting the men and women of the armed forces be forgotten. Your letters make a group of grown men, battle-hardened and gruff, act like a bunch of kids around a Christmas tree. Thanks. Staff Sergeant Matthew H., U.S. Army.
Your support may be the most important thing our troops can carry with them. But don't take our word for it. Take theirs. To show your support, visit americasupportsyou.mil. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Defense and the Ad Council.
Well, AISI, it was NBD.
You don't know what your kids are saying online, or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. Help delete online predators. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Merlin Olsen, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Oh, what's up, diggity dog?
Listen to the song of the day.
Great googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contest.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
My guest is Ryan Fishman. Ryan is a vice president of strategic consulting at Steward Media and author of the op-ed, Why Can't Republicans Figure Out How to Win the White House? Ryan, you know, my next question to you is kind of twofold. That's a big question to ask. Why can't they win? But let's start with branding, something you know a little bit about. Obviously, the Republican brand is not what it once was. And when we break down demographics from the election, we know that there are a lot of, and this is not a racial statement, but there are a lot of white men within the Republican Party. But they're not appealing to minorities. They're not appealing to Latinos. They're not appealing to African Americans. We, in fact, a couple weeks ago, had a documentary filmmaker on that did a film called Fear of a Black Republican. And if we had more time, I'd go into that in greater detail. But let's talk about branding. Is that the first battle, is rebranding the Republican Party?
I think that's certainly a place to start. But you can't just rebrand without actually changing the way that we do business. I think if, and I know one of your questions is going to be, is Mitt Romney to blame? But I don't think he is necessarily for the reason we lost. But I would say one reason we lost is we didn't make that fundamental reach to communities that are minorities where we could have given them a chance at descriptive representation. What I mean by that is, had Mitt Romney gone with Marco Rubio instead of Paul Ryan, he would have made a fundamental step for the Republican Party to show that it's not just about white men, it is about everybody. And here's a young, fresh leader from the state of Florida, a swing state, not like Wisconsin, where he maybe could have garnered some votes. So even as a strategic position, I think it would have made more sense. But ultimately, yes, if you look at the numbers, Mitt Romney didn't do as poorly as John McCain did with women, but it still was a double-digit drop-off from where the president was both 2008 and 2012. The Republicans have to reach out to women. And I can't tell you how many times, even working with a pro-choice Republican, running in a Republican primary, 6 candidates, so the guy was the only pro-choice option, we had so much trouble getting crossover voters, particularly women, because they said, I've foreclosed on your entire party. I'm not interested. This could be the greatest leader in the world, but I have no interest in voting for a Republican. It's not going to happen. So we have to get over the hump with women. We certainly have to get over the hump with African Americans, because African Americans and Latinos are our largest growing minorities. And that means instead of saying we're keeping everybody out, we need to, sure, beef up border security, but we also need to reform the immigration process for the people that are already here. And for African Americans, it's not about cutting welfare or cutting Social Security. It's about reconfiguring those programs. So, for example, adding drug tests to them and making sure that the money is going to people who are using it so they can rebuild their families and move forward. You know, the problem is the Republicans say cut, 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 and no new taxes. And those were great strategies in 1985 and 1990. But now we're at a fiscal cliff where if I was a new business, or I shouldn't say new business, if I was an established business and I said, I just want to cut my biggest source of revenue, because that's where the government's money comes from, is taxes, and not have any way to supplant that amount of money, it wouldn't make any sense to anybody fiscally, and that's why I'm surprised Republicans would make that sort of statement today.
How do Republicans deal with the Aikens and Murdochs of the world, where, you know, they are, you know, the Mitt Romney certainly had challenges with what was happening beneath him, and things that were totally out of his control, but when you don't denounce something or you don't walk away from something, as women were continuing to see the spiral out of control, where the candidate could have taken control of a conversation and just chose to ignore it. The whole 47% video and how that became its own story. First, we deny it, then we agree that it was inappropriate. You know, there were a lot of mistakes, but I don't believe that's why the Republicans lost the White House. I do think it's a foundational difference in an ideology that America is just moving beyond it. And Ryan, I've got to ask you. Well, I guess we'll get to that first, and then I've got to ask you about your demographic, because I think your demographic is the demographic the Republican Party is ignoring. But let's start with that. How do you deal with those fringe people like Aiken and Murdoch in your party that make it impossible, as you said, to find that crossover vote?
It's incredibly difficult because there are a lot of people like Todd Aiken out there in the Republican Party. They're not all necessarily elected to office, but they agree with the philosophy, and it's the philosophy that has to change. Obviously, there's a lot of scientists in the world that would say the Republicans don't know what they're talking about on more issues than just legitimate rape, but we have to fix the problem by making it clear at the top that, for example, I mean, I know there are Republicans who are going to fundamentally disagree with this, but for example, that if we were in the White House, we weren't going after Roe v. Wade. You know, we were going to let that battle die. That's certainly what I would suggest. But we have these guys, the Todd Aikens of the world, and even the Paul Ryans. I mean, Paul Ryan in Congress, and I can't defend this in good conscience, did vote and work to shrink the definition of there's the dollars from the government that go to certain abortion cases, and he wanted to shrink that from all cases of rape to only cases of forcible rape. I mean, that's a little difficult to defend when it's your vice president on the ticket, and that's why I think we didn't necessarily see Mitt Romney, who, you know, we could debate this all day, but I think the guy was pro-choice before. He's probably still pro-choice now. He sort of had to stick that in the closet to get through the primary, but I just couldn't see where he was going to make any sort of move on abortion, because Paul Ryan was so adamantly not only pro-life, but pro-life in circumstances of rape. And seemingly, I would assume, his right to life requests in all circumstances, because it's God's will.
All right, and we've got very little time left. Let's talk about the demographic you represent. I believe that that's where the Republican Party needs to live. And in many ways, Ryan, I'm going to suggest that your demographic is much more socially liberal. I'm not saying liberal. I'm saying socially liberal. And as a result of that, LGBT issues don't bother you the way they did your fathers and grandfathers, and I could go on and on and on. Do you believe that they need to find a way to attract you and people like you?
Yes, and I don't think it's just young people. I mean, certainly I'm young for a Republican, but it's a lot of businessmen across this country. Particularly you see this in the Jewish faith, because we don't put the same, even the Orthodox Jews don't put the highest priority on all circumstances of abortion, for example. But there's a lot of businessmen in this country who don't care about the social issues. They don't want the government to waste their time. They don't want to be taxed to have to deal with it. What they want the government to focus on is, number one, the economy, and number two, national security. So preserving what's going on inside our country and then making a difference outside our country. And I think you would see some of the top guys on the Forbes list in this country who are Republicans say the exact same thing. For me, it's about business first. And that's one of the things I said in my column. Yeah, sure, I voted with my checkbook, and I have Democrat friends. My closest friend would say, you have to vote with your conscience. You have to vote with your heart. Unfortunately, in this election, I didn't make that decision. But I think the Republican Party has to move to a place where it really is the party of small government. And I know you call it socially liberal to be pro-choice and to support gay marriage, but I think that, that ultimately is even more conservative because we're saying we don't want the government to play a role there.
And I can't disagree that, Ryan. We're just out of time. I have a feeling we'll be visiting again. I can't thank you enough for this conversation to be continued, my friend.
Absolutely.
All right, Ryan Fishman, once again. We've got to get to a break.
This is Reverend D. Alexander Bullock, Rainbow Push Detroit President and State Coordinator. I'd like to wish the First Shift audience a happy holidays.
Today in the United States, labor is under siege. Unions are being assailed. In states like Wisconsin and Ohio, collective bargaining rights are being stripped away, and so-called right-to-work laws aim to eliminate unions entirely so companies can pay less or outsource jobs completely. As a result, you're being divided, and there's no one place for you to be heard. No one place to speak, no one place to stand together, until now. Welcome to UnionCircle.com, an online community created specifically for union members. A place where 40 million active and retired union members, their friends, family, and supporters all across North America can be counted. UnionCircle.com provides a forum for members to interact and build a powerful voice. Union members can share their thoughts and opinions. Union locals can post news and announcements. People who run for public office and who stand with the unions can spread their message and rally union members. Because united we stand, united we vote. You'll also find union-friendly businesses that offer Circle members exclusive discounts, promotions, special offers, rewards, and coupons, all to help support America's workforce. And all UnionCircle.com members can create a call to action to make a real difference in their city, their jobs, and their lives. UnionCircle.com is the online community for anyone who believes in restoring the middle class and that the strength of this nation is in its workers. It's a website just for you. Will UnionCircle.com replace Facebook? Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's tightly integrated with both Facebook and Twitter. But while Facebook and Twitter connect you to family and friends and LinkedIn to professional contacts, UnionCircle.com is specifically designed to connect you with your fellow union members and to keep you plugged into union activity locally and nationally. It is the perfect site for all union members because America's unions have always known that there is power in numbers and strength in unity. Listen, be heard, take action. Now is the time. UnionCircle.com is the place. Get in the circle. UnionCircle.com.
Shocking news in the world of heavy metal. One of the hardest bands on the planet is about to release a children's record. Songs slated to appear on the album include A Tisket a Tasket, Hey Diddle Diddle, and The Hokey Pokey. Let's listen to a sneak preview. Here's Ring Around the Rosie, performed by the one and only...
Please deposit 25 cents for the next 3 minutes.
Radio. You shouldn't have to pay for it. This message brought to you by America's 13,000 local radio stations who believe some things were just meant to be free.
Ew! It stinks in here.
Passing gas. Is there a right time and a wrong time to do it?
Come on, huh? I'm trying to eat.
When indoors in the company of others, passing gas is not only taboo, it can be deadly.
I'm gagging.
Passing gas releases a plume of toxic vapors like ammonia and hydrogen cyanide.
Ah, you're killing us over here.
Every year, hundreds of infants exposed to passed gas die.
What? I cracked a window?
And just opening a window isn't enough. These deadly fumes can linger in the room for hours after odors have dissipated.
Daddy, you promised you'd smoke outside.
You're right, Pumpkin. Excuse me.
If you smoke, take it outside. Don't pass gas. A message from the American Legacy Foundation and the Ad Council. Get the facts at don'tpassgas.org.
Unions work. Did you know that workers covered by a union contract earn more money each year than non-union workers? And that a contract can put more dollars in your pocket each and every week? A union contract protects your wages, giving your family financial security. Does more money in your pocket sound good? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Stay connected with us. First Shift is on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us, like us, love us. At Tony Trupiano on Twitter and add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today.
Joining us now is Subodh Chandra. Subodh is an attorney with the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the homeless who is here to help us work through what happened and why it's important that we have this discussion. Sabode, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for shedding light on the issue for folks to know.
Well, you know, it's important as we see. I mean, we saw this, Sabode, certainly in many states. We saw it here in Michigan, obviously in Ohio. We saw it in Pennsylvania. We saw it in Indiana. And I could go on in Florida. You know, there's a real problem. And I got to tell you, I received a communication from a listener the day after the election that said, we should be embarrassed that we try to uphold ourselves as a beacon of light for the world, and this is the way we treat our voters. And I think that there's some legitimacy to that comment.
There is, and the court recognized that in its opinion. You know, to give you a little bit of background on this, because it's important for folks to understand how we got here, the lawsuit that we're talking about was actually first brought on behalf of the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless in 2006, and other groups as well, and individuals. That was in 2006, and it was originally a challenge to Ohio's voter ID statute, because what the fellow who's now the Secretary of State, John Husted, was then the Speaker of the House, and what they passed was a law that, you know, again, most folks superficially would say, well, okay, why shouldn't we have ID? And you can understand that concept, but the way they wrote the law is they wrote out the poorest of the poor. So if you have a paid form of identification, what we used to call in this country an illegal poll tax, like a state-paid driver's license means you got to have a car, a bank statement in your name means you got to have money, a utility statement in your name means you got to have property. If you had one of those things, you could vote on election day. But if you had the one thing that poor people have, which is their Social Security number to prove identity, you couldn't vote on election day. It was written out of the statute. So we had a federal consent decree as a result of that case that ordered that poor people would be able to vote provisionally on election day and their votes would be counted using the Social Security number. And of course, the state could then verify their identities by checking those Social Security numbers. That's what the court order was, and that's what Judge Marbley said was violated with Husted's 11th hour decree on the Friday night before the election. He turned the rules around and said that votes would be discarded where the form, the section of the form he'd created for recording what the ID was somehow incomplete or missing, when state law provides it's the poll worker's job to do it. So imagine what's really going on here. You have a so-called conservative taking the position that when a government bureaucrat screws up and doesn't do their job, your individual liberty should be sacrificed.
You know,
it doesn't make any sense at all.
It makes no sense at all. And, you know, it kind of goes back to an issue we had here in Michigan. And of course, I did some research on this. Other states had these problems as well. We're having poll workers that are not properly trained. And instead of the secretaries of state taking responsibility for the lack of training or improper training, this tries to put the burden on the voter themselves. And sweet God, Sabode, I mean, how can we ever think that the voter will know right from wrong on these issues when the poll workers don't know what they're doing?
That's right. And some of the evidence that we submitted to the court this last week, and think about this, the election was last Tuesday, and within a matter of days, we were able to find evidence that Husted's directive didn't even work because sometimes the poll workers were having the voters fill out that portion of the form as he directed. Sometimes the poll workers were filling it out. Sometimes they were doing a combination where the poll worker would fill out a portion, the voter would fill out a portion. And so you had a kind of chaos going, and clearly, some of the poll workers were saying in their sworn testimony that, hey, we didn't know what the rules were. We were confused by the training. So what this is, and because let's take a step back. I mean, folks will listen to the details and say, why does this matter? What matters is that every single one of these tactics that the Secretary of State of Ohio was undertaking over the course of the last several months all had the effect. I can't speak to his intention, but they all had the effect of shaving off a little percentage here, a little percentage there, of the voters that tend to be poor, which, as we know, statistically, tend to vote for the party that he's not a part of.
Okay, fair enough, and I think that that's an accurate assessment. Let's go back to a moment to Judge Marbley's 17-page ruling, 17-page, I want to kind of underline and boldface that because for those of us that read it, and we'll get it posted to our Facebook page, and I really do want to encourage people to read it. This judge basically was sending not just a message to Ohio, not just a message to John Houston, but sending a message to the country that we cannot disenfranchise voters. There are laws that protect these things, and we should honor them.
Absolutely. That was what he was saying. And, you know, Judge Marbley in this case has made it clear at every stage for the last 6 years that he's going to be protective of the right to franchise. He understands the state's interest in trying to protect against potentially fraudulent voting, although there's no record in the there's no evidence in the record whatsoever that that's occurring or has occurred. He understands the state's interest in that, but at the same time, you can't peel off and disenfranchise segments of the electorate.
Well, again, it's one of those. It's certainly, in fact, I found that decision to be so well written and such common sense. I literally printed a copy and filed it so that I could pull it out from time to time to remind myself how important it is that we continue to fight this good fight. And Subodh Chandra, I would think especially, and I'll ask you to tell us a little bit about the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless, but I would think that advocating on behalf of a community that all some of them have is that right to vote. And I mean, that's all some of them have. We need to protect that at all cost.
Well, it was very moving in 2006. I think one of the reasons we had this consent decree, one of the reasons that the court issued the order, and at that time, then Republican Secretary of State Ken Blackwell and Republican Attorney General Jim Petro entered into it, was because they were going to lose. We had a parade of witnesses in the courtroom ready to testify that they had been able to vote their whole lives, but as a result of that voter ID statute, they suddenly found themselves disenfranchised. And so the order ensured that they would be able to vote and their votes would be counted. You know, you spoke of Judge Marbley's opinion. I'm looking at it right now myself, and there's some extraordinary language in here that I have, you know, rarely seen in a judicial opinion. I mean, the court really calls out the Secretary of State for what's really going on here. He says, quote, "The surreptitious manner in which the Secretary went about implementing this last-minute change to the election rule casts serious doubts on his protestations of good faith." I mean, the court is very pointedly saying, you know, don't sit here and, you know, don't, as the old expression goes, piss on my leg and tell me it's raining. I mean, that is an extraordinary statement by the court, really effectively questioning the intentions of the Secretary of State.
Well, you know, and I'm glad that that happened, but I'm going to tell you why. Whether the Secretary of State were a Republican or a Democrat, here's one thing that that office should be. It should be above reproach. It's that office should be about protecting the integrity of every person's right to vote. And when they breach that, as John Houston clearly did, then they need to be called out for it, because this office should be nonpartisan. And not unlike Michigan, clearly it's not. And that's what the judge was saying, in my opinion.
That's right. And one of the things that your listeners should understand is this particular opinion about this particular scheme, which was disenfranchising voters where there might be a technical defect on the form that they fill out on Election Day, is just one of many, many things that the Secretary of State did in connection with the 2012 election that had a suppressive effect. I mean, I'll give you a few examples, and it's just a few of them, that are going to sound absurd to your listeners, but this is what we experienced in Ohio. You all in Michigan probably have early voting.
No, we don't.
You don't? Okay, well, in Ohio we do, and we did. And in 2008, it came in increasing demand because of the long lines. People really wanted to vote early and lock their votes in. And so the weekend before the election, thousands of people, particularly in the urban counties where the lines can get long, took advantage of early voting in 2008. What the secretary then did was try to curtail that and end it on the weekend before the election. He was taken to federal court by the Obama campaign. It was ordered that the early voting had to continue and had to proceed. And then initially he defied the federal order and said, well, I'm not going to implement that now. I'm going to wait for the appeals. And then the judge said, I want you to in my courtroom next week. And then he caved. But he curtailed the number of hours. So the number of overall early voting hours was much smaller. As a result, fewer people early voted because working folks got to work outside of regular business hours.
Absolutely. Sabo, let me ask you to stay with us. We've got to get to a break, but we'll be right back.
This is U.S. Congressman Gary Peters, and I'd just like to wish all of you and your families the merriest and happiest this holiday season.
On 1310 WDTW.
Hi, Tony Trupiano here. One of my pet projects for 2012 is to get those of you who have yet to register to vote to do just that. If you are connected to the internet, I have made it very easy for you to register. Just go to www.thetonyshow.org. That's www.thetonyshow.org and click on the register to vote button that is prominently displayed on the homepage. Now, there are no excuses, and it only takes a few minutes, and it's free as well. So if you have yet to register to vote, I am not concerned as to why, but I am concerned if you don't do it now. Again, just go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the button that says register to vote right here. We all care about our democracy, but if you are not registered to vote, then no matter how passionate you are, without voting or having the ability to vote, it's honestly just complaining, and we have all had enough of that. Again, go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the register to vote button now and register.
First Shift with Tony Trupiano.
In negotiating the deal with the state, the city was told to use Miller Canfield Law Firm. They had Miller Canfield on the state side and Miller Canfield on the city side negotiating this bond deal. Well, Tony, what typically happens when a municipality gets bonds from the MSA, negotiated bonds, they get that money. They get access to that money. But in this case, Tony, in this unique situation, the state said, I don't want the city to have access to its own money. This is the city's money, which means I'm a Detroit citizen. We're paying taxes or we're paying interest on that borrowed money right now, $137 million. But Dylan said, I don't want the city to have access to this money. Even the Michigan Finance Authority, Tony, said they didn't have a problem with the city having access to the money. It was Andy Dylan who said, I want them to have to come to me to get permission to use the money.
On 1310 WDTW.
After Sergeant Matthew Kyle was injured in Iraq, his young wife Tracy faced the daunting task of getting their VA benefits.
There's a lot of red tape, there's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of forms to fill out.
For years, paralyzed veterans trained experts have helped injured veterans and their families. National Service Officer Bobby Hager explains.
We're able to fill out all of the forms and applications and ask for all of the benefits that that veteran's entitled to.
To help, visit pva.org.
Today in the United States, labor is under siege. Unions are being assailed. In states like Wisconsin and Ohio, collective bargaining rights are being stripped away, and so-called right-to-work laws aim to eliminate unions entirely so companies can pay less or outsource jobs completely. As a result, you're being divided, and there's no one place for you to be heard, no one place to speak, no one place to stand together until now. Welcome to UnionCircle.com, an online community created specifically for union members. A place where 40 million active and retired union members, their friends, family, and supporters all across North America can be counted. UnionCircle.com provides a forum for members to interact and build a powerful voice. Union members can share their thoughts and opinions. Union locals can post news and announcements. People who run for public office and who stand with the unions can spread their message and rally union members. Because united we stand, united we vote. You'll also find union-friendly businesses that offer Circle members exclusive discounts, promotions, special offers, rewards, and coupons, all to help support America's workforce. And all UnionCircle.com members can create a call to action to make a real difference in their city, their jobs, and their lives. UnionCircle.com is the online community for anyone who believes in restoring the middle class and that the strength of this nation is in its workers. It's a website just for you. Will UnionCircle.com replace Facebook? Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's tightly integrated with both Facebook and Twitter. But while Facebook and Twitter connect you to family and friends and LinkedIn to professional contacts, UnionCircle.com is specifically designed to connect you with your fellow union members and to keep you plugged into union activity locally and nationally. It is the perfect site for all union members because America's unions have always known that there is power in numbers and strength in unity. Listen. Be heard. Take action. Now is the time.
UnionCircle.com is the place. Get in the circle. UnionCircle.com.
My guest once again is Subodh Chandra. He is an attorney with the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless. And before we go any further, Subodh, could you tell us a little bit about the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless?
Sure. The Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless is an organization based in Cleveland that is a member organization, essentially, of people who are homeless and are poor, and it provides services to them, provides counseling, assists them in finding shelter, assists them with issues like this, voting rights issues or other issues in which people's civil rights are being violated. And it's really been at the vanguard, as I said, since 2006 of taking on these issues of voter suppression. And I really give a lot of credit to a shoestring budget organization with community organizers who really try to take care of the poorest of the poor in our community.
Now, it's wonderful. It sounds very much like the function of our local Sugar Law Center. And it's good to know that organizations like the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless exist and certainly are advocates for all of us. You know, I preach often, Subodh, on this show that the one thing that we all have in common, whether you're one of the Koch brothers or whether you can't afford to buy a Coke, is we all have a right or should have a right to vote and make sure our vote counts. And that's really, honestly, at the end of the day, the foundation of this story, that's what this is about.
Well, we hold ourselves out to the world as Americans as having a model democracy, as being a place where every voice is heard, and having a representative government. And so what I find shocking, and I shouldn't be shocked anymore because I've now seen many years of these kinds of schemes, but it continues to shock me that there are people who simply want to change the rules of the game and don't want every voice to be heard and don't want every vote to count and are willing to do whatever it takes or is necessary to try to suppress that vote. I'd be ashamed of myself if I lived in the greatest democracy in the world and I kept trying to make it not a democracy, and yet there are people willing to do that.
Well, I said this story before the break. This story is not being done being told, and unfortunately that's true. Your Secretary of State, John Husted, has decided to appeal the judge's ruling, which, by the way, was pretty black and white.
He did, and you know, perhaps he's taking some comfort in that with a three-judge panel in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is removed from the situation, and with the mix of, ideology of the various judges there, that perhaps he has a shot at overturning this. But Judge Marbley was very clear in his order, and we put this into our brief that we filed in the middle of the night. He was pretty clear that it was his own consent decree that he was interpreting. It was, and that the law clearly provides that a judge has the discretion to interpret their own order. And so, we'll see what happens. I will never predict the future on these kinds of court rulings. Things bounce around. But Secretary Husted has a record now of losing these issues. Before the break, I was telling you about some of the other things he'd done. I'll give you one other example that's just extraordinary. And every single one of your listeners is going to understand it. Imagine you go in an urban area or a suburban area to a polling location where there are multiple precincts. And you walk up to the table, and your poll worker directs you to the wrong table, to the wrong precinct. This happened to thousands of voters in 2008. It happens all the time in these busy areas. So you get directed to the wrong table. They say you're not on the list, and then they have you vote provisionally. Secretary Husted's position to the courts was that you should be disenfranchised, even though it was the government worker that was responsible for the error. And the Sixth Circuit and Judge Marbley just shut him down on that and said, no, that doesn't make any sense at all to hold the voter accountable for poll worker error. But this is the kind of thing we're talking about.
Well, not to mention the fact that when he goes to appeal, when Secretary Husted goes to appeal this, it's paid for with taxpayer dollars.
It is. And one of the people who should not escape accountability in this, because this discussion has been focused on Secretary Husted, it is the Republican Attorney General of Ohio, Mike DeWine, the former U.S. Senator, who has been working in lockstep with the Secretary of State on this. It's not just the Secretary of State who is defending this case. It is the state of Ohio, and the state of Ohio has been taking the same position in court. And you're absolutely right. Taxpayer resources are being spent in defense of these kinds of unconstitutional actions.
Well, unfortunately, Spode, we have way too much in common. Our Attorney General, also a former member of Congress, not the Senate, working in cahoots with our Secretary of State, who they both happen to be Republican. In fact, yesterday she released a statement that she would not support early voting, but would support no excuse absentee voting as a substitute. And you and I both know it's not a substitute at all.
Well, that's right. And you know, one of the more interesting things about this that I'm sure your listeners will appreciate is, at the end of the day, I think a lot of these efforts backfired. I mean, to the extent that any of these efforts were an effort to try to tilt the playing field by a percentage point or two or more in favor of one political party, the effect that it had in Northeast Ohio, the effect that it had across Ohio, I think as people started hearing about these things, it underscored their determination to vote. And people stood in line for hours. And people made sure that they were voting and fought to have their vote count. What we're fighting over now is the counting of provisional ballots to make sure that votes count. It may not affect the outcome of a presidential election. It may affect the outcome of only, you know, some other races at the state rep level that we have that are very close, or some of the judicial races. It may affect no races at all. But as you keep pointing out, the dignity of every single one of those votes counts and matters.
Yeah, absolutely. And you and I could probably easily spend another hour going through Judge Marbley's decision. You know, one of the things that I picked up on was, and it was actually in one of the articles that I read, it says, Marbley said that the form illegally shifted the responsibility for recording identification information from the provisional ballot application from the poll worker to the voter, which we, of course, talked about. He went on to say throughout the ruling, that he criticized the provisional ballot application that Secretary Husted designed for the presidential election, saying, and he questioned whether the poor drafting was, quote, by design or accident. Well, there's an accusation for you, Sabode.
Well, it was an extraordinary statement, along with the observation about the surreptitious manner in which this was done on the Friday night before the election, with the secretary always protesting, oh, you can't have last-minute election changes whenever he's opposing our efforts. So these are some extraordinary observations by the court, really calling out the secretary. And what we hope is that the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals will pay due deference to the judge here, the federal district judge. Sometimes in these kinds of politically charged cases, there's the old adage that lawyers have that bad facts make bad law. We are resting on basic, well-established legal principles, due process, equal protection of the law, a federal judge's right to interpret his own consent decree. That consent decree entered into by the parties. I mean, Husted tried to get out of this consent decree earlier this year altogether, eliminating the protections of the consent decree, and he was shut down in that as well. So we hope that the Court of Appeals will adhere to well-established legal principles and not undermine the efforts of the district.
Well, we are just out of time, but I got to tell you, we're going to continue to follow this. Don't be surprised if we don't reach back to you and have this discussion again. I can't thank you enough for your time this morning.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I appreciate it. Sabode Chandra. Let's take a quick break here.
Hi, this is Joe DeSano from Main Street Strategies, and I want to wish Tony Trupiano and each and every one of his audience a happy and restful holiday season.
On 1310 WDTW.
Next time you need to stop for groceries, the 42,000 members of the United Food and Commercial Workers in Michigan ask you to shop at one of the stores where they work, including Kroger, Meijer, Hiller's, and Hollywood Markets. Shopping at these union stores helps support good union jobs, which build healthy communities. If you already shop at these stores, our members want to thank you for your support.
When my family found out I was on drugs, they were just terrified.
Everyone that loves her was devastated.
I mean, it got to the point where my mom couldn't even sleep if I wasn't home.
My parents almost got a divorce because of my drug use.
They were constantly bailing me out of trouble and paying off drug dealers and pawn shops and lawyers and hospital bills.
I don't think I'd ever cried as much in my entire life.
There was no time that she didn't worry about what was going on with me, and you could see it on her face.
He did not know how to take control of his life. The drugs had done it.
It was the closest thing to walking death I can imagine.
And I remember my mother saying to me one day, "You're going to die if you don't get help." I wanted to have my life back and my family back. And that's when my mother found Narcanon.
If you or someone you love has a drug or alcohol problem, call Narcanon today at 1-800-468-6933 or visit us at www.stopaddiction.com.
This is Detroit's Progressive Talk, 1310 WDTW, Dearborn, Detroit. Listen on iHeartRadio. NBC News is next.
News Radio. I'm Kristen Welker at the White House. Congressional leaders are scheduled to resume talks today in an effort to avoid the tax increases and deep spending cuts. NBC's Kelly O'Donnell says there is distance between the two parties.
One of the big problems that Republicans say is a sticking point for them is they say the Democrats want to use the revenue that would come from new taxes and use that to cover the cost of preventing some of the spending cuts that are a part of this so-called fiscal cliff.
A person who requested anonymity has claimed the body of Adam Lanza, the man who killed 26 people at a Connecticut elementary school. At least 9 people have been killed in a bus crash along Interstate 84 near Pendleton, Oregon. It crashed through a guardrail and went down an embankment. They are welcoming in 2013 in Sydney, Australia this hour. Hong Kong is getting ready for a fireworks display. Organizers say is the city's biggest ever. This is NBC News Radio. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is hospitalized for treatment of a blood clot. NBC's Andrea Mitchell says she's been sidelined since suffering a concussion when she fell after coming down with a stomach virus.
Clinton's spokesman has not said where the blood clot is located. Doctors not involved in her case say if in her legs, it is easily treatable. If in the lungs or the brain, it would be potentially more dangerous.
The American Academy of Pediatrics says every school district in the U.S. should have a doctor to oversee school health services. They could be full or part-time employees or consultants. The statement is online on the Pediatrics website. The population of the United States is growing at its slowest pace since the Great Depression. The Census Bureau estimates it will be just over 315 million on New Year's Day. The population is on pace to grow by 7.3% in this decade. That's the lowest since the 1930s. I'm Kristen Welker, NBC News Radio.
I'm Dan Kelly, owner of GoTime Fitness. I'm always trying to stay top of mind with my customers, and Constant Contact has the tools to help me do that. They make it so easy. So when my daughters started a business of their own, Constant Contact was the best advice I could give them.
Dad, we're 9. It's a lemonade stand.
Never too early to start.
From deals to events, social to email, Constant Contact can help you grow your business. Find the solution that's right for you at ConstantContact.com.
GEICO says, let's make life simpler.
What's the old saying? Build a better mousetrap and the world will beat a path to your door. The trouble is, a lot of mousetraps aren't any better. They're just new. At GEICO, we've been saving people money on car insurance since 1936. That's over 75 years of savings. It's simple logic, really. Why not go with the company that's invented the mousetrap? Of savings, that is.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
One more crack at it for Wall Street today, and even as we're not quite 16 hours from the fiscal cliff deadline with still no deal, stock futures are holding modestly higher for the most part. S&P futures gaining 3, Dow futures up 11, NASDAQ futures now slipping a bit, losing 3. As some investors place hope, at least some of the aggressive spending cuts and tax hikes can be avoided or at least delayed. Failure to strike a deal would cause economic fallout, but even if there is a deal, experts think we still will be significant dragging on the economy in 2013 just from the impasse we've already been suffering. 2012 will go down as a year for the record books in Hollywood. Los Angeles Times says thanks in no small part to superheroes, vampires, hobbits, and even President Lincoln. The movie business will finish 2012 with $10.8 billion in box office receipts. That would be the most ever. A lot of that's because of movie prices. 2002 likely will remain the biggest year ever for movie attendance. I'm Andrew O'Day at MarketWatch.com.
Did you know that certain gold and silver coins can be added to your retirement accounts? It's a fact. For years, investors have been adding popular coins like the gold and silver American Eagles to their IRAs and old 401ks. More importantly, gold and silver have quadrupled in value within the past 10 years. Major banks and credible analysts around the world are forecasting even more demand for both gold and silver in the coming years. Isn't it about time for you to consider adding gold to your retirement accounts? When it comes to adding physical metals to your retirement accounts, no one makes it easier and faster than American bullion. Call now for your free gold guide at 800-664-8864. Find out how to add U.S. minted gold and silver coins to your IRA and old 401k. Call the most trusted name in the industry today, American Bullion. 800-664-8864. Call for your free gold guide. 800-664-8864.
Because Mike switched to Geico and saved hundreds of dollars on car insurance, his money clip wants to shake his hand firmly for a solid 3 seconds. But it can't. Fact is, most money clips don't have hands to shake with. Switch to Geico, and every time you notice the extra cash, you'll know your money clip wants to give you a firm handshake. But remember, it can't. It doesn't have hands. It is, however, happy that you're saving money.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This is a special announcement from Lumber Liquidators.
Every floor in stock is on sale, and it all has to go at our end-of-year clearance. Get unheard-of clearance deals from just 19 cents a square foot, including first-quality laminates for up to 47% less, hardwood up to 48% less, bamboo flooring up to 22% less. Plus, get special extended financing. Do not miss it. Sale ends close of business Monday. Visit LumberLiquidators.com and find your...
The comments, ideas, and opinions expressed in the following program are those of the show participants only. Nothing stated in this program reflects the ideas, opinions, or beliefs of this radio station and or Clear Channel Radio.
I was absolutely blown away at the response to his brand of truth. Well, we've reached out to Representative Dillon, and he joins us this morning. He currently represents Michigan's 75th House District out of Grand Rapids, and soon will be part of the leadership team that takes over in 2013 as the campaign chair. If he needed any more passion than he already had, well, I'm thinking this issue gave that to him. Representative Dillon, I can't thank you enough for joining us this morning and standing up for every working man and woman in the state of Michigan.
Well, thanks for having me, and I, I only wish that there were more people in our House chambers that were willing to listen to what is actually the truth about this legislation, but I know there's a lot of people out there and a lot of people around the state and around the country who are watching what we're doing and are, outraged at the way in which we're doing this and also the substance of this nonsense.
No, there's no question it's nonsense, and I know as I was watching that speech that you gave on the House floor, that passionate, that beautifully done speech, and I got, and although you were holding notes, I'm thinking, Representative Dillon, most of that came from your heart.
Well, certainly did write a few notes, but this is an issue I've long felt, and I think the governor was absolutely right, was extremely divisive for Michigan. Once people really know what right to work for less is, I think they're pretty angry. When I've talked to, did a web chat with MLive at 4:30 last Friday, and even the reporter didn't even understand what this was. The assumption was, you go in to an employer that has union representation, and you can choose not to join the union and just go out and do it on your own. And I think that's the kind of misinformation that's put out there, is that you have that choice. And once people realize that this has nothing to do with that, it just is a way to allow them to freeload and to weaken the power of unions and take away their ability to collectively bargain. I think that strikes at people's basic sense of fairness. And that's really the thing that bothers me the most, is this is just, it really is allowing people to take advantage of other people who've worked very hard to be able to achieve something. And now billionaires who, in the case of Dick DeVos, inherited his entire fortune, are out there making policy for the state of Michigan. It angers me.
Well, it angers a lot of people, and certainly there's been a lot of reporting, and not enough in my estimation, but there has been some reporting over the last few days that the DeVos family and the Koch brothers have been funding an effort to push right to work since 2007. And Representative Dillon, when you have all the money you could ever want and then a whole lot more, you can continue to sustain an effort like this over a five-year period of time and wait for the right opportunity as presented itself in 2010. And, you know, this idea, and I think what people are most angry about, and I think to put you in this category, is that the governor has been disingenuous. And, in fact, many people, including myself, believe that he has been lying to us for the better part of 2 years or more.
Absolutely. I think he's been any... You know, I think the Free Press hit the nail on the head this week, and I wish they would have recognized this a little bit earlier. But, you know, the governor has, I will give him credit for one thing. He has been very shrewd at not tipping his hand about who he really is. But, you know, there's no doubt anymore that he's nothing but a partisan CEO, political hack, who takes orders from people like Dick DeVos and the Koch brothers. And, you know, he talked about how divisive the things that Scott Walker and John Kasich were doing. You know, he's gone above and beyond what they're doing. He's made it impossible to almost govern the state of Michigan going forward. And he's done it for no other reason than he takes orders from people who, as you said earlier, are billionaires who have the opportunity and the resources to just wait to strike when the iron's hot. And I just think it's, you know, it says a lot about him. He can't claim to be anything he ever was. You know, he's the only way he can call himself a nerd is that he's been allowed to be pushed around by a bully, and that's what happened.
I couldn't say it better myself. Representative Brandon Dillon is our guest. You know, from Grand Rapids, many would say that the birthplace of right to work in its modern form was born right there on the west side of the state in Grand Rapids. It doesn't really matter where the impetus came from. We are facing tomorrow some great challenges and great choices. As you know, there are thousands of people scheduled to be there. I will be there as well. And, in fact, I'd like to invite you. We'll be doing our show live from State Representative Harvey Santana's office tomorrow if you'd like to come by and say hello and get on the air again. But there are thousands of people, Representative Dillon, that are heading there. Now, we want there to be civil disobedience, but we want people to be careful. We don't want violence, but we certainly want our voices heard.
Absolutely, and it was really shameful last week when the Republicans, who had been hatching this plan behind closed doors for probably about 10 days while publicly the governor was out there saying, no, we'll have a thoughtful discussion on it. Well, apparently a thoughtful discussion is locking people out who want to have their voices heard and only listening to the people who agree with you. So I am hopeful tomorrow that people will be respectful, but I certainly expect them to be loud. I expect them to be angry, and I expect them to want to have their voices heard. And I know my House Democratic colleagues and I are going to be sensitive to that. And if the Capitol is locked out again and people are unable to get in the gallery, I suspect we're not going to want to participate in a sham vote. It really is. You know, this is getting to the level of, like, third-world banana republics when the entire legislative effort is choreographed right down to who is able to even watch the proceedings.
Well, you know, not to mention, and I'm glad that you bring this up, not to mention that many in your own caucus have not been allowed to express themselves. Of course, there was no public comment allowed. And there won't be public comments allowed. And I don't know that it would even make a difference. But Representative Brandon Dillon, when you talk to your Republican colleagues, and we were led to believe that some of them were really struggling with this choice, it was clear after the votes on Thursday that there wasn't much of a struggle at all.
No, I think there's some. You know, I haven't talked to a lot of them. I mean, the ones that I am closest to geographically, I think it was a foregone conclusion that they were going to vote for this no matter what, given that, you know, I think some of them actually believe in this. But be that as it may, no, and I think they had to twist a few arms, and there were some who, given their, you know, ability to vote the way they want, probably wouldn't have done this. But I think that speaks even more about kind of legislators they are. If you can't stick up for your constituents, if you can't do the thing that you know is right because you're getting pressure from people like Dick DeVos, and then to go even a step further and not allow even the other side to read the bills before they're introduced, offer any amendments while they're on the floor, and then shut off debate while we're trying to allow people to get in the Capitol to see what's going on. You know, we may not make a difference tomorrow. In all likelihood, this is going to pass. It's going to get signed by the governor. But, you know, this is not the end of this fight. It's just the beginning. There's a lot of people out there, I think, who have finally been woken up to the fact that this governor, this legislature, has had an agenda to try to break the backs, not only of organized labor, but of the middle class. And people, over the long run, are not going to stand for it.
All right, State Representative Brandon Dillon, my guest. Let's take a quick phone call here before we run out of time and welcome Dave to the show. Dave, thanks for punching in with us this morning. You are on the air with Representative Brandon Dillon.
Good morning and good morning, Representative. I'm Dave. I'm with the Communication Workers of America. And I just would like to add into this discussion, as people say, you know, this is a choice. People should be able to choose whether they want to be in a union or not. Well, right now they have that choice. They don't have to belong to the union. But everybody's forgetting this law allows that person who says, I don't need a union, allows that person who does not want to pay their fair share to reap all the benefits of the labor agreement. And not only that, federal law says the union has to represent this person. An arbitration case can cost between $10,000 to $25,000, $35,000. A union would have to represent that person who chose not to pay into the union. And that's not fair. The Republicans aren't saying, this governor isn't saying, if you don't want to be in a union, then you shouldn't live under that labor agreement.
Well, Dave, thank you so much.
I just wanted to add that.
I appreciate that. Thanks so much for the call. Go ahead, Representative Dillon.
Well, I think that you strike right at the core of why this is so fundamentally unfair. There's the perception out there, I think, that the opponents of the right to work, we call it right to freeload, put out there is that you just get to make that choice and then you can go and not be an at-will employee and strike the best deal on your own. And, you know, I heard Representative Shirky say this will make unions stronger by having to make their case. Well, what kind of case is it when an employee walks in and union comes up to them and says, here, we want you to join. Here's what you get, a collective bargaining agreement with higher wages and higher benefits. Workplace protections will represent you if you have a grievance, and it's going to cost you X dollars a month. And then the person says, well, what do I get if I don't pay the $50 a month? Well, you get the collective bargaining agreement and all the benefits, the higher wages, the representation. It's not much of a choice for a lot of people. They're going to take the easy way out.
Absolutely. Let me, again, thank you for your passion and standing up for working people everywhere. I hope I get a chance to meet you tomorrow, Representative Dillon.
I'll look for you.
Thank you, Representative Brandon Dillon from the 75th House District in Grand Rapids. A quick break here, and we'll be back.
This is Anthony from First Shift wishing our audience a happy and safe holiday.
On 1310 WDTW.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
speed pouring,
drink recipes,
customer service skills the industry is looking for, and much more. All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan.
Please call 313-962-5020.
Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan.
Your future is waiting for you now.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is the increased likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off, than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have the peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
My name's Rachel, and I'm 10 years old. I like riding my bike, playing soccer, and in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. My friends will drink, so I will too.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
My parents won't really know what's going on yet. I mean, I'll do okay in school, but when I drink, I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
Alcohol affects their judgment and their future. So start talking before they start drinking.
My parents won't believe it could happen to me.
For more information on teens and alcohol, and to learn what you can do, visit the web at stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Some look up to the Man of Steel and others follow lines in the web. But I look up to my real-life icon, my dad. And calling him anything less than great would be misguided. In his warm arms, I confided all of my fears. And as my time to rear others grows near, I'm reminded that women marry men just like their fathers. And I hope that's true. Anything less, might as well not even bother.
A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative, the Ad Council, and this radio station. Visit fatherhood.org for more information. Have you been a dad today?
Is America truly the land of the free? When working families have to struggle to survive, are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Merlin Olsen, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Yo, what's up, diggity dog?
Listen to the song of the day.
Great googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contest.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
Let me give you a little background. Many of you know that listen to the program on a regular basis that my mom and dad, when I was a kid, were foster parents. We had lots of foster kids in and out of our house. There were five of us as it was, so it was always a lot of fun, and I do mean that. It was always a lot of fun when we have foster kids come through the house. Some of them would be there a very short period of time. Some of them, one was there for over 2 years. My sister and brother-in-law are foster parents and, in fact, have adopted two of their foster kids. But not every foster kid is that lucky, and sometimes you can languish in the foster care system, end up getting to adulthood or approaching adulthood without ever being permanently placed with a family. Have you ever asked yourself the question, what happens to those kids? What happens if they want to go to college, or if they get into college, how they pay for it without having a family support structure? What happens when there's a holiday break or, you know, after finals are over with, where do these kids go, and where do they get guidance? Well, I'm happy to tell you there's a new program out there that is going to support quite a few of those kids. Let me turn my attention now to my next guest, and joining us is Steve Yeager. Steve is Director of the Children Services Administration for the Department of Human Services here in the great state of Michigan. Steve, happy holidays to you, and welcome to First Shift.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is a good story, and we don't have a lot of good news this morning. So, thanks for bringing some sunshine with you. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
You know, did I lay that out properly? Do I pretty much have it right that sometimes these kids really just kind of fall in a no man's or no women's land?
Yeah, you did an excellent job of laying this out, Tony. Some of our foster youth, as they're coming into care at older ages and turning 18 and needing to move on to post-secondary education, don't have the supports that some other foster youth do who are able to be returned home, be adopted, or in permanent guardianships.
And I want to point out, it's not that these are troubled kids. There may be lots of reasons why they're in the situation that they're in, but certainly, especially if I'm in this situation, I am a foster kid. I dream of getting that college education, and that certainly should be something that should be available to anybody, no matter what circumstances you're born into. You're here to talk about a pretty wonderful program that has been given a nice $800,000 shot in the arm.
Yeah, absolutely. These are great kids. You know, some of these kids come in into care at age 16 or 17, and they just don't want to be adopted at that point, and they really want to work toward independence. And so we're happy to develop a program to provide some additional supports. In 2008, we began to partner with Western Michigan University with a CETA Scholars Program. It's a great program that fully supports foster youth at that university. But a hallmark of that program is they provide campus coaches. These are folks that are on-site full-time to support foster youth and to provide them with the kind of supports that other youth, you know, parents might do. They'll help them with things like education, working through the financial aid world at college, and we all know that's difficult at best. They'll help them with employment, housing, and as you mentioned earlier, Tony, they'll even help them with, you know, what do we do over the break, over Thanksgiving break or Christmas break. You know, they'll work to create housing situations, work to support them where they can stay on campus and have a good experience over the holidays. So just provide some great supports for these kids. So we took that model. We know it works. The foster youth at Western told us that it works and that they really like that support. And so we have executed grants with seven universities across Michigan and $800,000 per year for a three-year contract with an opportunity to extend that for two more years so that we can provide those same kinds of supports to foster youth in other universities across the state.
You know, and Steve Yeager, it's not just great that this program's available. It's actually been wildly successful.
Absolutely. The youth at Western Michigan University have just reported tremendous success there. They've been able to maintain their work at the university in a manner similar to any other student there. And so these supports have just been critical to help them be successful in their educational experience.
You know, let's for a moment, and you may or may not have this information, but have we studied at any level what happens to the kids that don't or can't be afforded this post-secondary opportunity when they approach adulthood? What happens to these, well, let's call them kids for the purposes of this discussion?
Yeah, I don't have any specific data in front of me, Tony, but we do know nationally that as kids age out of the foster care system without permanency, that they do experience difficulties with joblessness, homelessness, those kinds of issues. And we know that we need to really support this population of kids much more aggressively.
If I'm a foster kid or I'm a foster family and I'm listening to us this morning, Steve Yeager, how can I get more information about this program and whether or not it might be right for me or somebody in my charge?
We can certainly contact any of the seven universities, Ferris State, Baker College at Flint, Michigan State University, Saginaw Valley State, University of Michigan Flint, Eastern Michigan University, Wayne State University, and, of course, Western Michigan University. So you can contact those universities, and they would be happy to help you. You can also contact our department. We would be happy to assist anybody in connecting with these resources.
I just think that this is a fabulously important program, and for a lot of people, I would think, Steve Yeager, is, you know, they don't you know, these are one of those things that people just don't think about, because for the majority of people, they're not connected to the foster care system, and so that this wouldn't necessarily be in their purview. And of course, this is nothing but a good news story. I love the fact that there is a dedicated staff member, full-time staff member, at that particular campus that is there specifically to provide guidance and mentorship. I would think that this is a critical component. You know, Steve, I'm sitting here thinking about my own college career. Obviously, you had a college career. Can you imagine having done that without family?
Absolutely not. I mean, again, students report that just the financial aid piece is just, you know, really difficult for them to figure out how to do the FAFSA and the other financial pieces and just things like, you know, what do you do in terms of living arrangement, housing, what do you do if you're sick, how do you navigate the medical community, just some of the basic things where parents normally would be there to support kids and provide that kind of safety net for them. They don't have that necessarily.
One of the things that I believe that is critically important, and again, whether it was when I was a kid, or as I've gotten older, and through the experience that my sister and brother-in-law have had in the foster care system, you know, a vast majority of these children truly just want to be validated, Steve Yeager. They want to know that they're valued, that they have options, that life can be can afford them the same opportunities. And that's really what they're asking for, just to have access to opportunity. These are the vast majority of these young people, especially young adults, do not have a victim's mentality. They just have a lack of support. And God forbid we don't give them these opportunities. This is really a gift. I can't begin to tell you how wonderful I feel this program is.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the key ingredients for any young person is they need to have hope. And, you know, our ability to come in and provide some support here helps provide them with hope for a future, and, you know, we all need that.
Oh, there's no question. There's absolutely no question we all need hope. It's something we talk about a great deal about in this program, hope and faith and again, the just access, just something as simple as access. Steve, I want to thank you for being with us today. I'm going to bet that you know, we've just given, a couple people a Christmas gift this morning, not realizing that this program is available. And this certainly, Steve Yeager, deserves a lot of publicity because it's literally going to help hundreds of young adults find lives that some of them probably, Steve, never thought they'd have.
Absolutely. And I really want to thank you for the opportunity to be able just to talk about this today. And I want to thank your sister and brother-in-law and your mom and dad for their part for stepping up and providing a home for kids. What a great thing that they've done.
You know, before I let you go, I will say this. If people have ever considered fostering, it is the most rewarding thing you will ever go through. You can define how you want it to look. I want people to understand that. They know they're always looking for more homes in the foster care system. There will never be enough. But, folks, if this is something you're interested in, all you have to do is go online. You'll easily find it. Lots of support out there. Lots of, Steve, great training for people that want to foster. There are a few things more rewarding than fostering.
Absolutely. Go on our website. We always need good people to step up and provide a home either temporarily or permanently for these young people.
Absolutely. Steve Yeager, again, happy holidays to you, and thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Tony. It was a pleasure.
I appreciate it. Let me just list off the schools again, or you can get a hold of the Department of Human Services. But the universities that are participating in this grant program: Michigan State University, Wayne State University, Baker College of Flint, Ferris State University, Saginaw Valley University, Eastern Michigan University, the University of Michigan Flint, and, of course, Western Michigan University, where it all started. Steve Yeager, thank you so much, and I want to thank everybody in the foster care system. I really don't think you understand, and that's okay. That's the whole point of what we do. We help educate you how important programs like this are to young people that wouldn't have opportunity any other way. This is a gift. A quick break here, and we'll be back.
Hey, it's Joe, and I'm just hoping that all the listeners at First Shift have a great holiday season and carry it on to a happy new year.
On 1310 WDTW, unions work. Did you know that workers covered by a union contract earn more money each year than non-union workers? And that a contract can put more dollars in your pocket each and every week? A union contract protects your wages, giving your family financial security. Does more money in your pocket sound good? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Today in the United States, labor is under siege. Unions are being assailed. In states like Wisconsin and Ohio, collective bargaining rights are being stripped away, and so-called right-to-work laws aim to eliminate unions entirely so companies can pay less or outsource jobs completely. As a result, you're being divided, and there's no one place for you to be heard, no one place to speak, no one place to stand together until now. Welcome to UnionCircle.com, an online community created specifically for union members. A place where 40 million active and retired union members, their friends, family, and supporters all across North America can be counted. UnionCircle.com provides a forum for members to interact and build a powerful voice. Union members can share their thoughts and opinions. Union locals can post news and announcements. People who run for public office and who stand with the unions can spread their message and rally union members. Because united we stand, united we vote. You'll also find union-friendly businesses that offer Circle members exclusive discounts, promotions, special offers, rewards, and coupons, all to help support America's workforce. And all UnionCircle.com members can create a call to action to make a real difference in their city, their jobs, and their lives. UnionCircle.com is the online community for anyone who believes in restoring the middle class and that the strength of this nation is in its workers. It's a website just for you. Will UnionCircle.com replace Facebook? Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's tightly integrated with both Facebook and Twitter. But while Facebook and Twitter connect you to family and friends and LinkedIn to professional contacts, UnionCircle.com is specifically designed to connect you with your fellow union members and to keep you plugged into union activity locally and nationally. It is the perfect site for all union members because America's unions have always known that there is power in numbers and strength in unity. Listen, be heard, take action. Now is the time. UnionCircle.com is the place. Get in the circle. UnionCircle.com.
For 7 o'clock on this Friday, the 6th, I am happy to bring my next guest on. Not only because we've got an important topic today, but as I announced the other day and put on Facebook yesterday, beginning next Friday, the Reverend D. Alexander Bullock will join our stable of regular guests. And, well, I don't really care what we talk about. He's just good radio. He's a good friend, and I feel just connected to him in a way that you want to share that with other people. So let us welcome back this morning the president of Rainbow Push Michigan and the president of the Highland Park NAACP, Reverend D. Alexander Bullock. Reverend Bullock, it's all, as always, a pleasure to have you with us this morning.
Tony T., good morning to you.
How are you, my brother?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I want to tell you, I'm excited about being alive.
I know you are, which is why I'm so excited that beginning next Friday at 8 o'clock, you will be with us on a weekly basis. I'm honored that you would even consider it, let alone say yes to that, and so I very much look forward to sharing you with this audience on a regular basis. I think that everybody is better served when Reverend Bullock is in the house.
Well, you know what, Tony? I appreciate that. I mean, I feel like I'm joining the Justice League. You know, I'm just happy to have been invited to be a part of the great movement that is the great radio that you do. You keep us engaged and informed, and we're excited about being on your show once a week and just and encouraging and inspiring people as well.
Absolutely. You were up in Lansing yesterday, Reverend Bullock. Why don't you tell my audience a little bit about what was going on up there?
Well, we went to Lansing actually a couple of times, started on Tuesday, spent all day there Tuesday, and then went back yesterday because there is a situation now that we have repealed Public Act 4, as we expected. There are a lot of legal loopholes and maneuvering in place to try to circumvent the victory that we won by reinstating the people's will and protecting democracy. Specifically as it relates to the Detroit public school system and what is known as the Educational Achievement Authority, or the EAA. Now, many of your listeners may know that the EAA is a new statewide school district that has been created basically by the will of the governor that takes the lowest performing schools in Detroit and then eventually around the state of Michigan and moves them into a second statewide district. It was kicked off in Detroit with about 15 schools, and so its basis was basically the power that Public Act 4 gave the emergency manager. Now that Public Act 4 is gone, there is no legislative basis for the creation of a separate statewide school district that takes assets from the Detroit Public Schools, that takes students from the Detroit Public Schools, that has an experimental curriculum, an online computer curriculum, so it minimizes the role of teachers. And also in the wake of all of this, the Attorney General and the emergency manager and the governor are saying that the elected school board of DPS were elected illegally, that in fact they are not elected representatives for the school board. And so we were in Lansing because they were trying to, are trying to put a bill in place now that will actually create a legal basis for the EAA. Although the EAA already exists in practice, it has no legal basis in the state of Michigan. And so we were there keeping our eye on that process. and we're beginning to organize now because this is just another attempt at state takeover, at taking away local control, at selling and seizing assets. And it is just a continuation of the fight against emergency management that we began many, many months ago.
Well, you know, and Reverend Bullock, as we discussed this in some detail with your friend David Hecker with the American Federation of Teachers Michigan yesterday, you know, one of the restrictions on this Educational Achievement Authority, and I want people to follow my line of thinking here. Let's say we're forced to close a school, and I don't care, in Midland. That school district has to maintain that building. They have to heat it. They have to repair it. They have to make sure that it's in working order. And if a for-profit school comes in and wants to buy it, they are forced to sell those assets without literally any competitive bidding, without any conversation, and without any legal footing to do that. They are forced to do it. And here's the problem, Reverend Bullock. We don't even know if the EAA is going to work.
Oh, not at all. I mean, this is experimenting with black and brown children at its worst. I mean, it reminds me of the worst kind of historical atrocities of government experimentation, like the Tuskegee experiment, where the federal government injected STDs into African-American males just to study them and see how it went. I mean, that was heinous, and you would think that the government would not be experimenting with people who were vulnerable. But, of course, the EAA has no track record. It's an experimental curriculum. The assets of the public school system can be seized, as you said, without any competitive bidding process. But more than that, you have a state mandated, if this legislation passes, basically the law will be that school districts have no decision-making power over whether or not their buildings and their students are seized by the EAA. And then also, who are the teachers in this new district? These are not typically teachers with long seniority. In fact, in Detroit, they're using Teach for America teachers, and so there are issues about collective bargaining and union busting. I mean, those issues remain with us. I mean, so on one hand, you've got the seizure of assets. You've got an anti-collective bargaining impulse as it relates to the employment. And then you've got an experimental educational curriculum where students are basically learning at a computer, and teachers are almost minimized or seen as useless. And so this seems to be setting our children and our district up for failure.
You know, it seems to me counterintuitive that if you are building a model of education that is a for-profit model, does that really serve what the foundational foundational principles of education are all about? Are we serving the child? Are we really empowering them with the right education? How do we attract the best and brightest teachers if we're more concerned about really attracting the best and brightest students? Because as we know, in these for-profit schools, they don't have to take developmentally challenged children. They don't have to take low-achieving children. They can pick and choose almost as if we're playing kickball on recess. The strongest ones get picked. The other ones have to go play somewhere else.
No, you're right. I mean, anytime you put profit over people, I think you have a problem. And when education becomes more about the bottom line than reading, writing, and arithmetic, then that's a recipe for disaster. You know, in the EAA, was very, very interesting because as we were there listening to the deliberation in Lansing, they have a standard they're proposing where there won't be any grades or real hard assessment. All that will be happening with these students is that they will be tracked based upon the work that they do on a computer. And so what that means, Tony, is that if I'm reading at a first grade level and I'm in the third grade and I'm in the EAA, well, then there's no time period. There's no real hard standard of accountability by which that district, that school, the school or the teachers have to improve my reading level. So if it takes me 16 months, to improve my reading level from first to third and I'm in the third grade, well, then that's okay. If it takes 6 months, that's okay. If it takes 9 months, that's okay. If it takes 48 months, that's okay. And so this seems to be a recipe for disaster. How can you prepare students for a competitive, globalized economy if you put them in a school district that has no standards to hold teachers and the district, the students and the parents accountable for learning and for learning development? If it's okay for me to take 48 months to be able to read, to write, and to do mathematics on the appropriate grade level, well, then I'm going to enter behind, I'm going to stay behind, and I'm going to leave behind.
All right, hold that thought. Hold that thought. We got to get to the break. Tony Truppiano wanting to wish all of you the happiest and most joyous of holiday season. Whether you celebrate the Christmas holiday or just celebrate the time of year, know that we here at First Shift care about you and wish you the very best.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
feed pouring,
drink recipes,
customer service skills the industry is looking for, and much more. All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan.
Please call 313-962-5020.
Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan.
Your future is waiting for you now.
Recently on First Shift.
Welcome Tom in Detroit.
The one gentleman, the rich ultra-billionaire that, as you called it, wasted $140 million and it would have been better to give it to the poor. What do you think, where do you think that $140 million went? What happened to it? Did he just burn it? The money is spent on advertisement, hotels, anything to do. That money is spent. It put people to work. That money wasn't just, they didn't just burn it.
Oh, so now Sheldon Adelson's a job creator. That's what you're saying.
It sure certainly is.
First Shift with Tony Truppiano
on 1310 WDTW.
Over 140 Rite Aid stores are unionized with over 1,500 United Food and Commercial Workers members working with a union contract in stores all across Michigan. Because they are union members, they have access to higher wages, a company pension, a health care plan for themselves and their family. And UFCW Rite Aid workers proudly serve their communities and at the same time enjoy a living wage and benefit package. Please support our union Rite Aid workers and make sure they know how much we appreciate the work they are doing. To join the UFCW family of drugstores, visit UFCW.org or call 248-585-9671.
When my family found out I was on drugs, they were devastated.
It was killing them, you know, it was killing them.
Tears your family up more than it does you.
My dad was frantic, and he looked at me and he said, "We're not going to gamble with your life."
I wanted to have my family back, and that's when my mother found Narcanon.
If you or someone you love has a drug or alcohol problem, call Narcanon today at 1-800-468-6933 or visit us at www.stopaddiction.com.
A weather advisory has been issued for the listening area. Heavy downpours may result in flash floods, while wind gusts up to 60 miles per hour threaten to knock down trees and electrical wires. Once again, a weather advisory has been issued. Authorities urge motorists to exercise extreme caution in the following areas.
Please deposit 25 cents for the next 3 minutes.
Radio. You shouldn't have to pay for it. This message brought to you by America's 13,000 local radio stations who believe some things were just meant to be free.
Attention swimmers! Get out of the water! Everybody, out of the water immediately!
Dude, that? It's a pair of thunder thighs. Big ones, too. That mom, who's been swimming a lot with her kids, must have lost them.
Whoa. I heard about this happening once up at Laguna.
Small step number 54. Play with your kids. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to get healthy. Learn more at www.smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Anna. Merlin Olsen, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Yo, what's up, diggity dog?
Listen to the song of the day.
Great googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contest.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us
at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
22 minutes after the hour, my guest, Reverend D. Alexander Bullock. We are talking about House Resolution 6004, which would create and expand. Actually, not create it. Would expand the Educational Achievement Authority. And as we spoke on the show yesterday and as we spoke on the show just in the last segment, you know, these are things, Reverend Bullock, that sound great. The Educational Achievement Authority, but what it really is a legalized way to, I guess, to enforce and to expand racism in our schools, because as we take a look at the bottom 5% of schools, most of them are in communities of color, unfortunately.
That's right. I mean, this is, let's call it what it is. It's a power grab by the state. It takes away local control. It disenfranchises the elected school board, and it ghettoizes the school system. Because basically what you do is you take the bottom 5% of Michigan students. We know those are going to be typically low-income brown and black students, and you lump them into an educational ghetto. We should not be, one, taking away the elected representatives that the people elected, namely the school board. Lamar Lemons is the president. There's a school board. We should not be disenfranchising the public school system, DPS, by taking 10 to 11,000 students out of DPS and creating another competitive statewide school district in addition to charter schools and private schools. We should not be experimenting on anybody's children with an educational curriculum and an educational model that has never been tested, that hasn't been tried. We don't know if it's going to be effective. But even more than that, we should not be creating an educational ghetto in Michigan where we lump all of the lowest performing students into a school district and basically say somehow they're going to be better off even though this district has no track record. But you know what, Tony, you know what I think is even more heinous than all of this? I think what's most heinous is that none of this really is about the students and about their families and about their neighborhoods. If a child has parents who are working, if a child has parents who are gainfully employed, if a child lives in a neighborhood that is stabilized, if a child lives in a city where there are recreational centers and recreational programs, if a child goes to a school district where there are computers and counselors and tutoring and everything that's available to them to help them learn, then they have what they need. You don't have to create a separate school district. Let's take the dollars that are being invested in experimenting on children and just invest them in the school districts that already exist and in the neighborhoods and cities that are already existing. Let's open up rec centers in Detroit. Let's get more counselors in the schools that are already in DPS. Let's get more computers in those schools. Let's have more teacher training. And let's just reinvest in the infrastructure that we already have.
Yeah, but see, the problem with what you're saying, and appreciate the way I'm presenting this, is that what you're talking about is true educational reform. What they're talking about is strictly a business decision. And it doesn't look like those paths want to cross in the mind of the governor, in the mind of this legislature. I want to remind this audience that it's the governor of the state of Michigan that is pushing this. It's not the legislature this time. It's our governor. Our governor is trying to break the back of public education.
Oh, you're right. You're right. And I think the whole conversation about education reform, how do we improve education, how do we raise the level of educational achievement, you know, across the state of Michigan and the nation. You know, I mean, this is a conversation that the people, that the labor movement, that pastors and other faith leaders and citizens, we need to really, really be engaged. I want to thank Helen Moore, who has been tirelessly fighting, Elena Harada, Lamar Lemons, and others, Reverend Ed Rowe, Maureen Taylor, so many activists who have been on the front lines who have not stopped. I want to thank the Michigan Citizen. I mean, they've been kind of covering, and not only covering, they've moved from covering to activism. And so we need more people to begin to look into the EAA. When we came together against Emergency Manager Tony, we fought back. They said we couldn't do it, and we won. But we won, but we're not done. They're still trying to take local control. They're still trying to seize assets. They're experimenting on our children in the name of education reform, busting unions. And at the end of the day, this cannot stand. So I want to applaud all of those freedom fighters who have been fighting. And I want to encourage people who are listening to me today on First Shift to get engaged. This is something we're ramping up for. This legislation has not been passed. And so we are in the middle of the fight even to stop legislation that would even authorize the EAA.
Yeah, this lame duck session is dangerous, no question about it. Let's go to the phones very quickly and welcome Tony and Macomb. Tony, you're on the air with the Reverend Bullock.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Worst academic record in the country, 25% graduation rate, extreme budget deficit, and widespread corruption. The Detroit public schools have been failing the children for at least 15 years. If the local school boards and people like your guests were able to correct this problem, the governor wouldn't be involved. So how much longer are we going to allow this public school system in Detroit to fail these children?
Well, no, Tony, let me stop you for a second. I want to go back to 1999, where the people of the city of Detroit passed a millage that the state of Michigan took that money away from the city of Detroit, did not allow that school board to spend that money. Governor Engler attached that money to the state budget, took that money away, and from that point forward, the school board's hands were tied. You can't solve problems without a budget. And this is the way to solve this problem is to not privatize the school, Tony.
Well, you know what, Tony? It works in other areas. You look at the DMC, Vanguard's come in and infused capital.
But that's not education. Education is not private business.
Listen, there are so many examples of private schools that are doing excellent academically because if they didn't, the parents wouldn't pay the money. We need to try something.
But see, that's the difference. Okay, Tony, thank you for your call. That's the difference. And here's the problem, Reverend Bullock. If I'm sending my child to a private school, and I have every right to do that, if I want to spend $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 a year out of my pocket to do that, I have a right to do that. I don't have a problem with that. Now let's just get this. Go ahead.
No, that's right. I mean, two things. One, the Detroit Public Schools has been under attack under Engler. I mean, if you look at what happened under Burnley and Robert Bob, I mean, there's a whole history of the state of Michigan messing up the DPS. But more than that, what people fail to realize, and you make a great point, education is not a private corporation. This is about children. And you can't stabilize the educational system without dealing with the lives and the families and the neighborhoods that the children live in. If I live out in the suburbs and I go to a private school, $20,000 on my education, I come home, no potholes, I come home, there are police, there's fire, there are lights, there aren't drugs everywhere. I mean, that's a different kind of learning environment, both in the home and in the school. We must deal with the fact that state government has destroyed DPS and has also created the conditions to dismantle the very neighborhoods and shipping jobs through our trade policy from Michigan to Mexico, attacking manufacturing and collective bargaining. And so if we don't get families employed, If we don't stabilize neighborhoods, if we don't respect elected representation, if we don't reinvest in the infrastructure, this will not stand. We're going to destroy the very future and the resource in the state of Michigan.
We are just out of time, Reverend Bullock. We'll look forward to having you on next Friday as our regular segment begins. Thanks for your time.
This is Kevin from First Shift wishing all of our listeners a safe and happy holiday season.
On 1310 WDTW. Next time you need to stop for groceries, the 42,000 members of the United Food and Commercial Workers in Michigan ask you to shop at one of the stores where they work, including Kroger, Meijer, Hillers, and Hollywood Markets. Shopping at these union stores helps support good union jobs which build healthy communities. If you already shop at these stores, our members want to thank you for your support.
Before I was like a prayer or like a virgin, before I invented MTV, you heard me, Madonna, on the radio.
Radio. You hear it here first.
I'm working two jobs, and my husband works too.